the board station.
I just want to announce to the board members and the public that there will be a memorial service on 9/11 at the Courthouse Plaza, which is on Main Street in Urbana. Urbana Fire Police AmeriCorps program will get together and do a memorial service that day from 2 to 4 p.m. We will have a reception for the police and fire personnel immediately following the memorial service at the post office building in Urbana, which is the Independent Media Center. Thank you.
Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you. Last week, about 25 to 30 elected officials from all over East Central Illinois traveled to DeWitt County and attended a seminar at the Clinton landfill. The results of that is simply that I would say there was a consensus that to build a PCB landfill over our drinking water of all East Central Illinois, which can affect over 700,000 residents, is, in my estimation and in the sense of the elected officials there, they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. There's a lot of skepticism about the claims made that this landfill could never leak and cause pollution to destroy our drinking water. Mr. Steve Carter from the city of Champaign is putting together a report on that, and I'll bring it to the county board. It was an interesting 4 hours with a lot of, let's say, heated discussion concerning this landfill. But I'd rather not go into any further detail at this point, but I'll get a report out to the entire county board. Thank you.
Any other announcements? All right. Finally, please turn off your cell phones or put them on silent. And we'll go on to the first area, Justice Social Services, Mr. Richards.
We have one item on Justice and Social Services tonight. We have a resolution, Champaign County joining the National Moment of Remembrance of the 10th anniversary of September 11th.
I'd like to move as a resident, born and bred in New York City, and the day before September 11th, my wife and son were in the Trade Center buildings. That weekend, my son took my wife for her birthday to New York City, and part of that visit was to visit the Trade Center towers. It was, to this day, is still very emotional for me to see what took place. It's something that we need to remember and never forget, that there are those who would want to kill the life that we have built here in our country and the freedoms we have. Thank you.
Moved by Kurtz. Is there a second? Seconded by Esri. Is there any discussion? Just want to point out, everybody can read the resolution, but in addition to this resolution, EMA does need us to do this, both so we can formally sign on to this national resolution, and also there's a number of emergency services items that are going to be coordinated with this remembrance, with the noon central time remembrance here. A number of sirens are going to be going off, and EMA is also going to be coordinating with a number of churches to ring their bells and things like that. So we're also formally authorizing that for them to go forward in our name on that, as well as the resolution, which you can read in this packet, which is part of a nationwide resolution and a nationwide movement being forwarded by Senator Lautenberg of New Jersey. Are there any comments on this item? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes.
Okay, having transportation, Ms. Kohler.
Thank you.
Good evening. Highway and Transportation wants to open up with some monthly reports for the county and township motor fuel tax claim for August 2011. Second by Al Kurtz. Moved by Al Kurtz. Second by Hammond. Okay. Open for discussion. Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Now we're going to the county engineer report.
Good evening. Item B1, resolution awarding contract for Stanton Road District, section 1028-971-OOVR. The letting for this this project was held this morning in my office. I've given you all a packet that includes a cover sheet from the plan set, so you know approximately where this project is located, as well as a tabulation of bids. Kind of an unusual project in that we actually received 7 bids on this project. It was an aluminum box culvert, 20 foot 4 inches across and 4 foot 6 inches tall. So a little bit of an unusual project for us. I will remind you that there was a resolution that was passed back in December giving us the authorization to appropriate the money from the county bridge funds, and this project was brought to you for approval at that time as far as moving forward, and now I'm bringing it back to you to approve the bids that were opened up this morning. Engineer's estimate of $153,747, and the low bid from Newell Construction was $153,379, so very close to the engineer's estimate, under the engineer's estimate, and I would ask that you approve that low bid.
So moved to approve.
Okay, it's been seconded and approved, but we're open for discussion now. Annie?
Yes, what is the timeline for this project?
It will be completed. We have a completion date of December the 15th of this year.
Any more discussion? I almost called you Lorraine, but your name is Carol.
I just wanted to ask who the engineer was. How did we get the calculation of this?
Say that again.
Who the engineer?
Cummins Engineering out of Springfield are the ones that actually did the aluminum box culvert design. Contech, which is a company that builds these type of structures, actually manufactures them. So what happens is basically the structure is delivered in pieces to the job site, and it's the contractor's responsibility. It's kind of like a big erector set, more or less, and they put it together on site and then lift it and set it in the hole. It's about how these things work. So this is about a 2-week project at the most to do something like this.
And so the contractor said this is how much it costs to put the box together.
Right, yes. Yeah, it includes all the parts, labor, everything to complete the project.
Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Yes.
All right, next item is item C, petition requesting resolution approving and appropriating funds for a project in Philo Road District. This is a very small project. It came through a request from Brian Meharry in Philo. It's along the Embro River, just north and west of Philo. He's basically got a bridge where the riprap underneath the bridge is washing out underneath it, and you can start to see some of the piles underneath the abutments due to the fact that the water's been high and the riprap isn't holding. So basically, this $8,500 is to pay a contractor almost to hand place riprap underneath the bridge, because they've got to get up underneath there and put riprap riprap underneath an existing bridge. So it's actually for a repair of the structure to stop it from eroding along the banks.
Okay, the motion by Ralph.
Second.
Second by Sanders. Open for discussion. Ralph.
Yeah, we're going to grout the riprap. I mean, the old riprap that was put in there wasn't grouted right. They basically threw old concrete chunks in there. You know, it wasn't real riprap that was placed in there and compacted. And it'll be grouted on top of that. So we'll put a slurry seal on top of it to kind of hold it all together.
Alex?
If it's acceptable to the mover and the seconder, can we ask that the word replacing on item 4 be replaced with repairing when
Thank
this comes
you.
To full board?
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
That's all I have, man.
Okay, is there any other business for highway and transportation? Seeing none, we've got 8 B1 for the consent agenda.
B1
no.
Was, there was a no vote.
Okay, I'm sorry. B. 8C.
All right, thank you.
Next up is facilities with Mr. Betts.
Good evening. This evening we have the long-awaited presentation on the East Campus Stormwater Management Plan from Burns and Clancy. And no further ado.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm Chris Billing with Burns Clancy & Associates, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here this evening to present the results of our study and analysis, and then to answer questions as you may have for as long as you have questions to ask. So you all do have a packet that's been left for you. That's basically the presentation. I will be going through that in a little bit of detail, and hopefully quickly enough that we'll provide plenty of opportunity to respond to your questions. So let me set up an exhibit here. You do have 11 by 17 size, reduced size copies of all these exhibits in your handouts, and that may be easier to follow through and looking at it in detail as we go through. The first page, I wanted to basically recap, do a very quick summary of the stormwater management plan that was prepared in 2006, which kicked off basically the construction in the northern watershed area with the ILEAS, fleet maintenance project first, and then the reuse coming about of the former nursing home, which became ILEAS. The one page here basically is a quick summary of that stormwater management report, which has been okayed and accepted by the city of Urbana. We have two watersheds. Let me see. Maybe I can carry this around a little bit. Okay, we have two watersheds on the site. Basically, there's 11.3 acres on the western portion, which was the fleet maintenance area, and the tributary area south of that currently is ball fields, but is campus property. And then we had an eastern watershed, basically area 2, which wrapped from here over to your eastern boundary lines. Down here's the watershed, comes down through Humane Society, the youth detention facility, and over here, kind of along the north side of the adult detention facility back here. Basically, a lot of this back area here in the very center and northern portion of your property of the watershed. So we had that was about 31.8 acres. Basically, we go through, in order to determine, according to Urbana's regulations, the release rate, we look at what the agricultural flow rate conditions are, and I've summarized that peak flow rate from the west watershed of about 16.5 cubic feet per second, and from the eastern area to about 31.8 cubic feet per second. Under the proposed conditions that the plan called for, basically constructing some stormwater detention basins, a box culvert type storm sewer because of the flat grades. There are three outlets to the watershed. This one, a 15-inch storm sewer, has been constructed as part of that initial phase of construction. There is a two storm sewers across Main Street as well that serve as presently serve and has served for a long time as outlets for this overall watershed. The idea is to build detention, connect all these outlets together, take drainage then from both the 11.3 acres and the eastern watershed to the 31 acres and outlet them through the three outlets. Basically, Area 1, the fleet maintenance area, incorporated within the assumptions of that, we have about a 72% imperviousness for this watershed. As you can see right now, that looks toward future conditions, so we build something that's going to serve your needs, not just today, but for your planned improvements. So right now, we certainly don't have 72% imperviousness. In the northern area with fleet maintenance, we do approach that, but in the future, the southern area could be developed too with that amount of imperviousness, and that's incorporated within the analysis and calculations. The 16.5 acres took basically the larger area and looked at it in two segments. About 16.5 acres would be the western portion, including Art Bartel. The assumption made there is about a 65% imperviousness for that whole area. At the present time, there's less than that. If you recall earlier on, we had an exhibit that basically looked at the redevelopment of the nursing home site. It had additional parking lots and things like that, so it would increase imperviousness. So we took that, basically more intense usage, and said that would apply to this whole 16.5 acres. So that would be about 65% imperviousness. And then the eastern portion, about 15.3 acres, the assumption is that this would become about 55% impervious. There's areas over here on the far eastern side. There's probably not development anticipated in that for a good long time, if ever. Well, none of us will be here when that happens. So not all of the area wouldn't become totally as impervious as these western portions do. That did include adding about 2.5 acres of imperviousness to reach that 55%. At the time of the study, that watershed was less than 40% impervious. So those are the assumptions that went on in the background of the analysis. The stormwater detention, as outlined before, we have the fleet maintenance ponds here that have been dug. That was about 5.4 acre feet. In the future, when the box culvert would be extended, that would be about another 0.4 acre feet. And as areas over here were to develop a future detention, a small amount of 0.9 acre feet, and therefore a total of about 6.7 acre feet of stormwater detention volume was needed to be able to actually, that would even address the 100-year storm. The City of Urbana's stormwater management ordinance just requires you to do the difference between the 5 and the 5-year storm release rate up to the 50-year storm, but they still want to chart where the 100-year water is. It doesn't all have to be in the basin. In what was proposed before, all of that 100-year flow was managed within the basins, taking those outlets into account. The very bottom of the page, again, is another summary out of that report, basically just to show you for area 1 and area 2 what the 1 through 100-year peak flow rates are. And those served as the basis then for where we went for our analysis for today, for what we reviewed and what we're looking at. This exhibit quickly shows you basically what your drainage infrastructure is today within these watersheds, the stormwater detention basins that have been built. A little piece of the box culvert was extended underneath the parking area. We have, I think the watershed limits are shown on your map. Outlined in green, there's an 18-inch storm sewer that comes down from Main Street around to the back side of the, you know, former nursing home. All of the nursing home area immediately behind it over the years of additions and all did have some storm sewer connected to it. A little bit of storm sewer coming up, a 12-inch size up from the south. But then you have essentially drainage culverts underneath the roadways and swales, most of them roadside swales and ditches that direct water throughout. In the last few years, there's been a notable amount of imperviousness. It's been added new buildings and new paving has been added to this area. I know that's confounded the some flooding problems that occur in this area, as there's basically overland swales and then a 12-inch storm sewer, which regulates the outflow from all of that. Basically, your existing conditions, and that's what we started with, an understanding of that, to look at two different approaches to dealing with your stormwater management. I'll put the next exhibit up and go right to one of the two approaches. Number two, storm sewer. Okay, if anyone had any particular questions, feel free to stop me as we go along, and if it's easy to answer, that's probably the most expedient way to make sure that you have a good understanding of what we're doing as we go along.
I'm sorry, I had a brief question about the status quo. Can you confirm, I'm looking at the outlets from the existing drainage basins, and from what I could tell from the plans, it looks like the north basin actually drains into the south basin, and
yes,
the south basin drains out to the west. Is that?
That is correct. There's a 36-inch storm sewer under here, which is underneath the ponds, and so they're essentially hydraulically connected. They look like two ponds, but they really function as one pond, really.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, the first approach we looked at was to continue in the direction of the stormwater management plan and take a storm sewer extension approach to providing the drainage that you would need. Let me review. We did cut the watershed up into a number of sub-watersheds to look at the directions of flow and where we would have to serve these various little, you know, 1.2 acres, 1.66 acres, 3.27 acres. So we looked at a much smaller refined detail of where water actually flowed as it was outlined in the original, you know, essentially as it flows today, you know, how your drainage plan has been developed over the years. We show this extension of the concrete box over here to actually just short of Art Bartel Road, over on the west side of Art Bartel. We do need to make some drainage connections for our outlets then. Up here, 24-inch connection to this 24-inch storm sewer across Main Street, a 12-inch storm sewer connection to this 18 that goes across Main Street, and from there, come back, build a 36 and a 30 across Art Bartel, and bring in a new storm sewer southward along, just parallel with Art Bartel, very close to the pavement. The idea then is we're going to leave the existing 18-inch storm sewer in that comes along the west side of Art Bartel. Seems to be functioning, and it has a capacity of, well, under gravity flow conditions, about 7 CFS. So it didn't seem reasonable to dig that up and replace it with something bigger. We will utilize its capacity and therefore only have to build enough capacity for what we're missing yet. So we build a 24-inch storm sewer over here, and the design of the storm sewer is predicated on gravity flow of at least a 5-year storm flow rate, and then we know under storm conditions where storm sewers are surcharged, we know we can get more water through them because there's more head pushing the water through. So we size these sewers at least 5-year gravity flow, and to be sure we get more than the 50-year storm flow rate under surcharge conditions to take them through the pipes. When we get storms, regardless of what size we design for, we'll always get a storm bigger at some point in time. And we know we can get a little bit more capacity out of storm sewers, but then we know we start backing up a little bit within low areas. But it's areas that are kind of now presently flooding, so that'll be along your road corridors and all. But as that grade line comes up, we still push well more flow through those storm sewers than we do under gravity flow conditions. Anyway, 24-inch storm sewer coming down, and then a network essentially of 15-inch storm sewers to interconnect all of these other sub-basins. Once we get in and pick up with 15-inch storm sewers, all those other areas, you now have the backbone of your storm sewer system to serve all of this area too, on both sides that you can connect to. Basically, we take off all this other flow off of that 18, that existing 18, then can actually serve this area on the back side of the Ilias building. Yes.
With this plan, I assume that the drainage in the softball field south of the highway building and a little bit to the east of that, that's also surface drainage, correct?
That's correct. This area is served right now. If at some point in time this area, this drainage does come this way around the building and up into the pond directly around the west side of the fleet maintenance building. So in the future, and I don't know that there's any plan for this, but at some point, at such time in the future, the drainage outlet for that is this direction around the west side. That major watershed divide between Area 1 and Area 2 is kind of here. We're not intending to take water kind of from Area 1 all the way around and take the long way to come around. Okay, that basically lays out the storm sewer improvement that would be necessary. The other thing, looking at the utilities in place, we do have a sanitary sewer that also comes down parallel with the existing storm sewer on the west side of Art Bartel. We stay away from that sanitary sewer that serves as the spine coming on to the south. There is a water main farther to the east, which makes us have to build this storm sewer essentially a few feet off of Art Bartel. But there's a small corridor in there that we, using trench sheeting and stuff as they go by, a trench box, we need to put that in. The other thing to note, the storm sewer is just a little bit, it's running about 2 feet above the sanitary sewer. Fortunately, that sanitary sewer is pretty deep. So in the few places where we have to get across it to provide outlets to watersheds, that's possible to do. It's also running deep enough, though, for the most part, I think the new storm sewer will be below the level of that water main. So if we do have to get closer than 10 feet to it, we can still keep a 18-inch vertical separation with the water main, which is something that we have to do, too. So it's basically the only corridor that seemed to make sense reasonably in order to be able to locate that main spine to take the water northward. But then once we do that, all of these sub-areas back here can drain out. They'll still be draining out the 24, or the new 24 and the old 18, go northward with the interconnect up here. Now, we did stub across with a 30-inch over here to get under Art Bartel. I haven't shown any extension of storm sewer over here. This 2.79, 3.19, 1.57 acres all drains and comes this direction. That size to be able to accept this runoff if storm sewers ever want to be extended there. But there's no plan in either this or the other plan to do any real change in development there. So the outlet is provided by this and interconnected, and will be ready at some future point, some years down the road, whatever, if there's ever a redevelopment or expansion in those watersheds down there. I have put together, I think the next sheet in the set is a cost estimate for this option. How to go through as many items and be as consistent between this and the next approach that we take too. So I go down there and given there's 20 items there with quantities and the unit prices that we utilized in putting together this estimate of costs, and we come down to something on just about $400,000 in order to run all of this sewer, all of the extending the box over, and then run all this main storm sewer that you see, and repairing the surface basically with lawn, which is what's there today, or pavement, obviously. So before I start with the other approach, let me see if there's some questions I can answer here.
Well, start to finish, how long will this project take, considering average weather conditions?
I would say we're probably, assuming rather average weather conditions, you're probably talking about 2 months of construction.
2 months.
Okay, you've got to expect a little bit of rain and whatnot in there. But there's nothing tricky. It's all, straightforward storm sewer, all means and methods essentially that are not unusual and very typical for this style of construction. Yes.
And on the 18-inch sewer line that you're going to leave in, is there any existing cracks, or does it get clogged up when we have like that 100-year rainfall that we had a couple years ago that everything got flooded? Is the capacity of that basically reasonable? Or what I'm trying to say is that what I would rather see is you probably put a 48-inch pipe, since you're already digging the hole, than leaving the existing 18-inch and then also putting in the 24-inch. Because what you're indicating is the capacity of the 18 with the capacity of the 4 should be enough for the next 5 years. But what I'm saying is if there's development that's probably going to be happening, maybe not within the next 5 years, wouldn't it be better now that if we're digging up the pipes to put in a larger pipe, perhaps a 48, 4 feet, instead of, have your 18 and 24, which is 42 capacity?
Okay, addressing your first point, we did not take a look at the existing conditions of the sewer. That 18 could be televised, and we could assess the condition of the 18. That certainly would be a reasonable item to undertake if we think that there's even a potential concern with the structural integrity or capacity or anything of that sewer. I have not ever heard any reports that it's had a problem, but if staff can point out that there's something to be concerned about, the integrity of that existing sewer, then by all means we should investigate that and make sure. Worst comes to worst, if there's a few cracks, some dislodged pieces of pipe, it would be possible, rather than to dig it up and fix it or replace it, we could put a liner in that. That's a fairly established technique. It's been around now going on probably 30 years or so, and it's used all over town, all over Champaign-Urbana, the university campus. I know that we do lining of sewers. So we can restore the integrity of the pipe without having to dig it up by lining the inside of that if that were necessary. To address the other point you make, the design assumptions I made in sizing the capacity of these sewers and projecting the sizes we need is based on, again, going back to the original stormwater management report of essentially a build-out development of 72% impervious and 55% impervious. And so it's predicated on those developments happening. It's the sizes, the capacities I'm proposing are not just to meet what you see today, but it's to meet the projected demand, the projected runoff that we were expecting in that report originally, the 2006 report. So by putting that in, we're actually putting in more capacity than we need today, but we're putting in capacity for the future for what those expectations were. Yes.
In your opinion, will this work?
Certainly.
It'll solve the problem in your opinion.
Yes.
Thank you.
And the size of the piping along the north side, is that also 24 or is it 42? The one on the top.
This piece here?
Yes.
Okay, that's that 4 foot by 6 foot concrete box that was identified in the report. So actually in the report in 2006 it identified that box, and because it was connecting your three outlets together. The report just indicated that additional storm sewer would have to be extended, within the watershed without laying it out. What we've done now, basically continuing on from that, is now to lay out this piping arrangement and to see what sizes of pipe we need. So yes, that's that 6 foot by 4 foot box that's laid in a fairly flat grade in order to make the appropriate connections, these three outlets to the watershed. And again, across the top, we come down and we dig up a little piece of the 18 in order to get around at a place where we can cross Art Bartel. We're putting a 36-inch there. We're going across the street with a 30-inch because now we have the capacity to do these other future watersheds in the future if we ever need it. And then when we build the 24 south, then that's what we need to pick up these watersheds. And this one is 5.56 acres, which is the backside essentially of the Ilias. That's what that watershed by itself alone is what will go through the 18, the existing 18. All the other watersheds essentially feed into the new pipe. Yes.
I don't even know how to really formulate this and sound intelligent, but I really don't understand a lot of these pipes. Okay. But just looking at the colored drawing of the existing drainage infrastructure and the proposed drawing of this new pipeline through, they seem to follow a similar course.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering, A, why, and B, I've just never heard of flooding in this area, so I'm wondering the purpose of this as opposed to what you're saying on the other side or the western part of this that doesn't have current drainage currently.
Okay, the area before some of this other development that's happened, there was some periodic, reports of periodic flooding and whatnot. I think it's certainly exacerbated now that we have more acres of imperviousness. We just in this development area here alone, we added about nearly 1.5 acres of imperviousness between the roof areas and the new pavement that have gone in this area right there. So one of the basic problems with the drainage system that's there, we rely on other than some 12-inch storm sewers trying to get flow and an 8-inch here, trying to get flow to that existing 18. We just have a system of roadside ditches and some culverts. Most of the culverts are 15-inch diameter, but none of them have great capacity. They would serve okay for a routine storm. A large storm event, though, backs up and floods in all the road in the ditches and won't fit through those culverts. And so we leave the roadside ditches and the culverts in place still to help move water around. But we bring the new storm piping system through essentially that same corridor. That's about the only real available corridor left to get from the north side, from Main Street back to the back. That's about the only really alignment we have. And in many respects, this area slopes, the western area of the watershed slopes toward Bartell, and this eastern area a bit slopes westward toward Bartell. So that's kind of the low area, and that's where it makes sense that drainage infrastructure is, and that's why the existing pattern is there, and that's why it makes sense to also put the new storm sewer there, because it's kind of in the low ground.
Sorry, are you done?
Okay. I'm not sure.
Okay. I just want to, it would be useful to clarify how much of the existing green infrastructure that's shown on the status quo picture is preserved in this. I think that was confusing. You're not removing all this.
No.
Most of this is staying, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Green lines aren't on
right,
the
right. Yeah, no. I
if you could clarify that a little bit, how much of this is staying here? I think people are thinking you're taking all this out.
Okay. All of that existing infrastructure is staying in place. Exactly. But it's not, since it's there, it's not part of the proposed plan. So I didn't highlight that on this exhibit. This just depicts the new infrastructure to be extended. But yes, all the roadside ditches, all of those culverts under the road that are existing now still will stay in place, and they still will serve a useful function to get the water, to get the surface water to this storm sewer system.
But that's not the case in the second program. Some of the existing infrastructure has to be removed.
A little bit. I'm actually using as much of that existing infrastructure in the second approach as well.
Okay.
Yeah, to the maximum extent we can, yes. I will. Yes, I will. Okay. Any other... And it's okay to ask questions on a previous something if it comes to mind, so that's okay. But if there are no other questions at this point in time, I'll go on to the other alternative approach. Okay. Yeah, I don't know if that's possible for everybody to see. Again, I hope you can follow along on your exhibit. That's not very straight. If it's not level, I won't have water run in the right direction. So, okay. This is a best management practices approach at dealing with our new drainage conditions for this watershed. Again, we. under the present conditions, this western, this Area 1, the 11.3 acres, basically has all the stormwater detention volume already constructed in the original ponds that we have over here beside in front of the fleet maintenance building. All the stormwater detention volume is over there that's been constructed to date. And that's on the order of about 80% or so of all the stormwater detention that was identified in that 2006 report. So most of the volume is already built there on this side. So you won't, I haven't proposed doing any of the green infrastructure approaches, these best management practices over here, because this water, this piece, this watershed is pretty well served with stormwater management as it is today. All the problems are the flooding and the drainage problems that have been expressed by staff has occurred over in the Area 2, these two watersheds here. And that's why this approach came over and addressed how to get the water out of here and interconnect it to, and that's why you'll see most of the work is over here in this Area 2, these two watersheds. There is one other important aspect. I still have a much smaller, but I still have a drainage connection for what we're doing over here from the north end of Bart Bartell. I still have a drainage connection with just the 24-inch diameter storm sewer pipe over to interconnect with those stormwater detention basins to the west, because we need to still use the volume, some of the volume that was built over there for what we're doing. It's only a 24-inch diameter storm sewer and not a 4-by-6-foot box, so it's much less expensive interconnection. But if I don't interconnect them, then I don't have the advantage to use all three of the outlets that this overall watershed has available to it and the stormwater detention volume that's already been built over there. So there's still an interconnection, but not the big box, much smaller. What we have a palette or a variety of best management techniques that we essentially go through and build on along the same spine, the same Art Bartell, the low area where we kind of see our existing drainage infrastructure. That still is the key for the alignment of how we interconnect everything. But the overall goal is basically twofold. One, let's change some of the characteristics of the watershed so that we can reduce the amount of runoff that we're going to get in a storm event. The thing is, we'll see the biggest impact in very small storm events and very little runoff. In the very large storm events, we will see a little attenuation, but you know, when we get a half an inch of rain or a quarter of an inch of rain, you might almost see no runoff coming out. But if we get 10 inches of rain, there's only so much water that the plants and the ground and all soak in. So what we've done is a variety of things to actually create some stormwater detention, interconnect some stormwater detention, but change the perviousness essentially of what we're dealing with. So basically we have that big, well, it's a mound of topsoil, but we have the big hill, which, you know, we'll get runoff off of that because of the steepness of the slope. If we change that to an upland grass prairie, we can reduce the volume in this, you know, this 2.18 acre watershed here, so that's certainly a little bit more than half of that. I've got on the so that's the only area of upland grass prairie that I'm indicating. It certainly can be put anywhere, but that seems to be a very good application in this regard. We've got some bioswales that are noted in the dark green, which basically follows the roadside ditches and ditches in existing swale areas that we have now. And we want to change the conditions of those standard roadside ditches and create bioswales so that those will be able to actually soak up
a bit more water than they do under just grass conditions. We basically are still using the 15-inch culverts that go under the roads as the water to move the water around from watershed to watershed. There is some around the salt dome, some more standard, just salt-tolerant vegetative swales and grasses, because we know we have salt that we have to deal with in that area. So some of the bioswale-type plants aren't going to be as tolerant of salts. You know, so in the immediate area, we have some of those in there. We have two pods here where we have two large areas. I actually want to dig down, create a little bit of volume in there, but those will become wetlands. So we will have, and I think I do have, I put basically a water surface elevation of 731, which will be a couple of feet below existing perimeter grade, a water surface elevation of 728, again, essentially a couple feet below existing elevation there now, to actually take that down and then create some wetland conditions. So we will have some amount of open water. The actual open water, the water in the wetlands, there may be some deep pockets here and there. Most of it will be probably less than a foot to, you know, just a little over a foot. Most of the wetland area won't be that big, but we will have some areas of a little bit deeper, maybe a couple of feet deep of water depth, just to have open water there. What that does is it gives us a wider variety of conditions to grow different types of water plants and stuff within there, and then on the bank immediately adjacent to the water. So we have, again, basically two wetland basins. We have some, what I call rain garden areas, a little bit that's leading just to the west of this one wetland, some rain garden then up along the north and along Main Street, taking some of the flow from here. All of this, all the water coming down this bioswale, and we still have to get underneath in storm sewer. And as we're heading here, north of the parking lot out in front of Ilias there, we want to take that elevation actually down several feet, about 5 or 6 feet. The bottom will still be low, or will still be dry, I'm sorry, so I'm still calling that not a wetland, still calling that more of a rain garden condition. But what will happen as this water, you know, since the capacity of the 24 is much more restricted than the 6 foot by 4 foot box is, we will have an opportunity for water to actually come up from the bottom. Certainly the front end of the building all drains by surface into that, but we'll actually have an opportunity as a hydraulic grade line comes up in that storm sewer, that this area will fill with water. And then with the rain garden type plants we have in there, we'll have an opportunity to soak up a bit more of water in that. In that region. Yes.
These wetlands are always going to be wet, right?
Correct.
If you did this, is there any mosquito abatement or anything like that as part of this?
I haven't included any. That could be an ongoing maintenance, but ongoing operational thing to check into. I don't believe there's been a really reported mosquito problem that's gone on in the wetland that's over in the park to the east, the big wetland basin. And so, could we have some mosquitoes? Yes, possibly. But what we have in the wetland is not going to sit there and not flow. That's usually what breeds the mosquitoes, is when you kind of have the stagnant water. Actually, all of these watersheds, it's the other thing, this watershed to the south comes, feeds this way. I'm bringing a pipe across the road here, and we'll take about half of this 3-acre tract here and direct that through this wet basin. We'll then send all this water along this swale through this one. So what we really have is, anytime it rains, we actually have flow through conditions. We will push the water. This water, we have a little over 5 acres or so, or 7.5 acres, I think, actually flowing through this wetland. We have that plus this. We have 12, 15 acres feeding water through this wetland. So we will have water moving through them. The water level will rise and fall a bit, and that will attenuate a lot of the mosquito problem when you have water actually moving and fluctuating. Yes. Can we expect flooding on Art Bartel Road? We're going to improve this ditch that you see there now, widen it out, deepen it. I do have included a small underdrain, essentially. The underdrain that's listed in the cost is basically from here underneath to connect to it to make sure that we move water through the swale and through the underdrain as well. Up through about that 50-year storm, you shouldn't see. I mean, you'll see water within the swale, the bioswale, but you should not see water up reaching Art Bartel Drive. Certainly.
Except in 50 years.
No. Well, up through the 50-year, we'll down be below. Yeah. Well, beyond that, yeah, you actually now have a little bit wider area here, and it will get outside of the swale. I don't think it will. I don't think you'll see it ponded up over Art Bartel to any. You know, certainly not on the high part. Art Bartel is a little bit lower back here. As you come through here, it's kind of top of the hill. So that's one of the reasons we sort of, in putting this bioswale through, we're kind of grinding through that little bit of crest to make sure that the water won't flow northerly.
Why is this second one the best practice as opposed to the first one?
That's a best management practices is a newer name that describes the use of these alternative type approaches to the standard drainage, standard swale, standard storm sewer type approach, which is what essentially the first one is.
Is there some reason why they're better other than the fact that it costs a whole lot more?
They're best management practices as a way to do something different with water than drain it in an accelerated fashion downstream. So it's part of a larger, more environmentally conscious movement that says we're not going to accelerate stuff and get it, you know, causing streams downstream to, you know, flash rise and flood and whatnot. We're trying to hold things back and somewhat more mimic, well, the natural conditions, even before it was agricultural land, mimic the natural conditions that everywhere along the way water was slowed and the peaks were attenuated. And I mean in this community alone, you had, when the first settlers came, the Boneyard Creek stopped being any kind of identifiable ditch system at Lincoln Avenue. West of Lincoln, it was just prairie. And of course now you can see the Boneyard Creek through the campus and the city of Champaign, how it's a big gigantic waterway, and that's all from the standard applications of drainage. Let's get those big peak storms off, and we need conveyance ways, whether it's sewers or ditches or swales or small river systems or something like that. So,
are there a greater upkeep cost to the second one? In other words, you know, you have these wetlands. Do they eventually track in?
Yes, there are. I mean, standard drainage systems and storm sewers, they need maintenance as well, but those are need rather, especially bigger size pipe, need less maintenance operating. So operating costs and maintenance costs for standard storm sewer systems, underground piping systems are pretty small. If you had ditches and waterways, there's maybe a little bit more maintenance having to go with, you know, repairing riprap that's failed and mowing and things like that.
Can you give me a 20-year cost difference between this one in terms of maintenance?
The best management of practices approach would certainly have higher markedly higher operating and maintenance costs. Especially for the first handful of years, you're trying to get different types of vegetation established. So I've put in the cost for that some seeding, but a higher level of also putting plugs in to try to get these different plant species established and all. But that doesn't mean that maybe for the first year you may have $10,000-$12,000 worth of somebody's effort to go out and essentially maintain, essentially kill weeds that are coming, because the standard weeds are very vigorous in their growth. Okay, so very quickly weeds will grow and all. These other plants that we're talking about using would take a little bit longer to establish. They will have extensive root systems, and once established, they should hold the weeds and other things pretty well at bay. But it will take a couple of years of a little bit more effort to make sure that they're getting established. It's not like it's not like you do your lawn. It's not like throwing seed out and water it, and that's really all you have to do. And it will be a little bit of work.
How often do you have to retrench with sediments building up for the water running?
With these plants, once they're established, as long as you don't have any other areas, if you have areas where you're doing construction and you have erosion occurring, those will deposit within your within your swale areas and your rain gardens and all. But really, once everything's established, you should have really very slow deposition of sediments. I would say most, like rain gardens and all, figure they can go a good 10 years or maybe 15 years without extensive, before their first really extensive maintenance.
So let's say you have a 50 or 100 year rain, you aren't going to have a huge amount of sediment moving during that time frame?
Not really. Most of your sediment actually occurs in your smaller routine storms, because they happen all the time. If you get your 50-year rain, you have some sediment, but it only happens once every 50 years. So on the grand scheme of things, your sediment transport that you need to be cognizant of, it occurs actually on your every little half inch rain, 1 inch rain, inch and a half rain that you get routinely over the course of a year. You get more sediment off of those little storms than the one time in 25 years or one time in 50 years. I mean, that will move sediment, but you just don't get those rainstorms that often. Yes.
Your best management but more expensive plan takes how many acres away from us on our East Campus?
I'm thinking when I kind of added that up, that was something on the order of 15 acres or something like that, 12 to 15 acres. I didn't write that down. But it does, yes. It does take all of these areas here. It does put them to use, so it takes them out of other potential use. Yes. Yes.
In comparison to the first plan, the second plan, how long will it take from start to finish?
The second plan probably would take about the same amount of time. There's a bit, certainly less piping and stuff to put in, but you have different sort of crews that are going to be working on these establishment of these rain gardens and wetland area basins and bioswales and landscaping. So time from start to finish, between the two is probably fairly comparable. One thing we will have more, we have to make sure we want to do it, all the amount of planting here at maybe the most opportune time of year.
That was my other follow-up question. So this project probably would not start until potentially spring. And then also, in order to get this established, plants take time, and I know you said you're going to have a strong root system, but would you say that this project really wouldn't be mature for between 3 to 5 years, or do you think it would be sooner than that?
either project, because there's some underground. I actually could even start somewhat in the winter or early spring. You can do underground work throughout a good part of the winter, actually. But the landscaping, whether it's this plan and we have to restore the lawn, that would be in the spring. And certainly when we're doing this variety of plants here, for most all of those, I think spring is a better time to do those as well. So we're talking about opportune time is, say, late April to mid-June, sometime in that time frame. Yes, this will take just restoring lawn, a good season, making sure you're watering and stuff, essentially a year, you know, maybe the following spring or something like that, a little more than a year, to really have things pretty well healed that you don't have to worry about. The opportunity for doing this variety of plants will take heavier maintenance for a good year, a little bit less for a second year, and certainly into a third year to really make sure that the plant mix that we want to put out there is established. Definitely. Yes.
What's your best guess on the differences in the sanitary district discharge fees between the two approaches? I assume one of the things that we're going for with best management is reduced runoff. So is that's going to reduce the amount of fees we're paying, right?
Well, right now, right down the sanitary district, yeah, doesn't enter anything. You're not discharging anything to sanitary. No, all this is a runoff and stormwater. But what you may be talking about, though, I know the city of Urbana is looking into a stormwater stormwater utility fee and rate structure. I know they're a bit behind the city of Champaign in their planning and adoption and all. So far, irrespective of what you do here, from what I've heard from the city of Urbana's presentation, and I don't want to speak for them because that's only 25% of the way along, but they're going to, I understand, they're basically going to charge you based on the amount of impervious area you have. So unless they also give you credit for doing some of these BMPs, these attenuation things, you know, if they don't specifically give you credit for that, you're still going to be charged. Whether you do this or do this, your bill to the city might be exactly the same if they don't incorporate giving you credit for doing this. Now, these things also will, these BMPs do also address stormwater quality. And I didn't mention that before because we're looking at the flooding and looking at the quantity. These things obviously will improve water quality over just straight drainage to a storm sewer system. And I don't know the extent to which Urbana might incorporate water quality in how much they would, you know, charge everybody, you know, including the, you know, for every site within the city.
Yeah. Chris.
Oh, okay.
These swales, environmentally friendly, that I'm just wondering what would be the response to them. We've just had almost 2 months of no rain, hot weather, 96, 98 degrees, with more to come, mm-hmm. predicted over the years. How would these swales respond to that? Would it be better to go with a just piping rather than to worry about what would take place with drought over a summer?
What you'd have, again, if we go a couple years down the road and these plants are pretty well established, they do have pretty extensive root systems. So they may, you know, die back and brown up a little bit, but those roots are still going. As soon as you get any bit of water again, those plants, once established, will come back. The wetland plants might be a little bit different situation because they do want to have that higher level of water for those, that wetland area. And so if you had a 2 month drought, again, and the wetlands dried up, and wetlands do. On the long run, the plants will generally be just fine, but immediately when you get a rainstorm, they may not be functioning until they can essentially come back to life again. If you have
that long slow water,
the yeah, That's true. It will have a whole lot less impact on slowing the water, and will have a noticeable impact on not improving the water quality, as long as those plants are dormant or so. That's correct. So you do have that window of time. You're kind of in the same situation even in the winter. Everything dies back too. So over the course of the winter, the roots are still taking up some moisture in all. So they're still alive, but the impacts of what you see these plants, see these things do in the middle of winter, and then if you have very dry conditions, it's certainly different than when you have your typical spring-fall average moisture conditions and temperatures, yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yeah, this is following along with Mr. Richard's question and the future Urbana tax on this, perhaps. What I thought I heard you say when we transitioned from this one was that this would reduce the imperviousness of rating of our area. Is that not the case? Would this have a better score in that kind of analysis than this?
Yes, as long as they take into account giving you credit for these DMPs. What I have seen their presentation so far is they're going to look at the amount of impervious area. So that would be roofs and paving, okay, things like that. And they're going to base their charges on that. Now, by doing this, you actually are attenuating some of the flows off of there. So you are actually, overall, because of these, you're going to generate less runoff. And so if they do, when they establish their ordinance, if they do have ways of giving you credit, or people with rain barrels, or people that do, you know, have a rain garden in their front yard, if they do establish some procedures to take that kind of stuff into account, then what you manage to do here will get some credit too and lower the fee. If they don't take those into account, then they're just going to look at how many square feet of roof and square feet of paving you got. And all the other things that you do might not get credit. So I can't tell you what they're going to do because they haven't decided.
Mr. Langenheim? Use your microphone.
A comparison statement on routine groundskeeping when that's up and running in a mature condition versus this up and running in a mature condition. Mowing, gardening, all of the rest. Is there any difference, or do you know anything about it?
What you have, these sort of plants, they won't need mowing. Mowing is relatively, you know, if you're mowing some stuff out here, mowing a little bit more doesn't add a whole lot to it. I would say for the most part you're not out here maintaining these on a routine weekly or biweekly basis, but you may be out on a 3, 4, 5 times a year basis for a little bit more effort at going through, making sure the weed stuff is out and the plants that you wish to thrive have the best conditions available. It's hard to say over the course of a year how many hours of fertilizing and mowing versus hours of weeding. It may not be vastly different total numbers of hours. So by going to this route, they are going to just have to do different activities. Definitely, to maintain these.
To say then that you really don't have a concrete idea of that, or how you go about getting a concrete idea of that.
Can't hear you.
How to go about getting a...
How would you figure this out? Or can we?
If... You certainly will be spending more time for the first couple of years getting it established to do this versus mowing the lawn. I think the only other way is to make contact with some folks that have had something established 3 to 5 years and see how many hours they're doing versus what they were doing mowing.
Or talk to a horticulturist.
A horticulturist will certainly be able to give you an estimate probably on getting things, you know, established and whatnot. But these are I think having going to experience a project experience that has done this as opposed to it would give us maybe give us a better idea of hours of maintenance for this many acres over the course of a year.
Patsy?
Yes, I have a number of questions and maybe sharing of some information. Coming down from EPA are everyday new rules and regulations on the handling of stormwater and stormwater management. And all those rules and regulations are going toward best practice management rather than more piping and culverts because they're concerned about water quality, runoff, sedimentation, etc. So that's something that all of us need to be keeping in mind as we make our decision on which way to go in solving this stormwater management. The second aspect is to respond to some of the questions as to how, in best practices, how these plantings survive as weather varies. We've had a drier summer. A couple of years ago, we've had very wet summers. When these are planted properly, that's the whole purpose of them, is that they survive under all of these conditions. They have roots that are 2 feet long. That's the whole purpose of it. It handles any sedimentation. There's very little sedimentation shifting. So that is not a problem. The care of them, they're usually established in a year. The Robeson Rain Garden was planted in June. If people go by and look at it right now, it is full and robust. The huge rain garden that was planted at the church on South Duncan is now a year old, and it is very robust, very full, and functioning fabulously well because I make a habit when we have one of our rare big rainstorms, which we've had one just recently, of going around and looking at how these are working. So those issues are really moot, and we have so many examples now within the community of this kind of approach for drainage that we can look at it. The John Street Watershed Project, we're putting in the rain gardens along New Street in front of the Unit 4 Administration Building as we speak. That's a whole large rain garden. Two huge rain gardens are going into the new Washington School in Champaign. So we've got lots of examples that everybody can go look at. The next issue I want to address is the acreage that you have assigned there for wetlands. Everybody designs in different ways. I wouldn't have done wetlands. I wouldn't have taken the acreage out of the campus that way. I would have used the ditching, and the ditching would have been the rain gardens, not bioswales, and that would have taken the drainage out. So there are ways to eliminate taking up that acreage and taking that out of potential space that the campus might expand. And the last thing I want to address is the assumptions that you laid out for us. Again, the trend now and where everything is being pushed is to think green. And your assumptions are such that you haven't folded in any of the green building principles that should be being followed as the county expands. They did not do it when they put the design build in. They laid concrete down in that building, and they didn't lay porous concrete, which aggravated that whole area there. Now it's just one big area of concrete, which is making the situation even worse. So as the county builds, they should be thinking of porous concrete, cisterns, other things that help mitigate how much water is going to then be shedded off, whether Urbana gives credit for this or not. That's where EPA is pushing things, and that's what the county is really going to have to start thinking about as we plan ahead for anything that we do on the county campus.
Mr. Maxwell?
I normally associate best management practices with non-point sources of pollution runoff. And the only reason I would say to, I would want to spend the money, the difference is if somebody was forcing me to address the issue of a non-point source pollution runoff. I don't know whether we have that problem here or we will in the future, but this is one of the prime reasons that you would use this type of thing to improve water quality.
Mr. Esri?
Just a question. Patsy mentioned she wouldn't have used the wetlands. If you eliminated those wetlands, estimate, I realize, because that's not the way you designed it, how much deeper and or wider would you estimate you'd have to make these swales to make up the difference?
Well, in the wetland areas, I do have, I am taking them down in order to create somewhat of detention volume. I have to get those down. So if we were to turn these for the time being into more a rain garden, so it's back up at grade, okay, and I took that volume out, I don't know if I can give you that directly, but maybe more indirectly, if we increase this pipe size, maybe one pipe size, so that I could, instead of providing some attenuation and volume back here, if I can use more of that volume that's already built, then I can probably pretty much, you know, reduce what I'm doing here if I can get it over there.
Ms. Ferguson?
I just wanted to say it's a matter of sustainability. For a couple hundred years, the model that we have used for water is to pull it up out of the aquifer and then pump it off to the nearest river and on down to the ocean, and we're emptying out all the aquifers. And this is about is returning some water to the aquifers instead of pumping it all the way to the ocean.
Other questions?
Well, yes, to answer that question, yes, that's true. You have the best management of practices approaches are addressing different goals for what you're doing. So, yes, we want to recharge aquifers. The thing is, we're recharging the shallow aquifers only. We're not recharging our aquifer we get our drinking water from, because that's going to take 10,000 years or 50,000 years to go from ground surface down, 300 feet. So, it's going to recharge the shallower aquifers. We have different layers, and all of that is helpful to mitigating the flow. The streams won't see the as large of fluctuations in low flow and flood flow and all. We're trying to put those back at a more even keel like they used to be. Not that average is the goal, but is to put it back more as we found it in nature. So it's a kind of a different set of goals. The goal of what we're trying to do here, though, we can't forget, is essentially flood control and all. So I have done this with an approach that it's hard to compare, apples and hot dogs. I mean, they're so different. So I'm trying to use these different approaches, though with at least all discussing fruit. We're still discussing stormwater management and how to do it. And yes, there are other advantages, other goals and objectives that you can reach using the best management practices that the standard drainage way of doing things do not address. But since primarily the effort is improving drainage and managing flood control, and what will regulations be by EPA or by whoever in the future? I don't know. Are they changing? Yes, they are. And how quickly they'll change, I don't know. But we never seem to have less regulation. There's always something more that we need to be looking at. So that's true for the future.
Thank you.
There are two other exhibits on the end. This is the majority of the approach and the cost estimates there I've provided. But let me, the very tail end, There were two additional questions early on. Is what might we do? The first one is what might we do with that existing detention basin, the western of the two ponds, that really doesn't have a finished edge treatment. So I have a little sketch in your exhibit in your packet there, and on the next page behind it, a brief description of a proposal of an alternative, and there certainly are a couple of different ways to do it, but keeping in this best management practices approach to go back down the normal pool. The situation we have is we have a water level, and then we come up very quickly, about 3 feet high, within 3 to 5 feet. So we have a very steep bank that the concern is about. So if we take that and go down to essentially the normal pool level and excavate back at a 1 in 5, a much more gentle slope, and then plant some native plant mixture in that whole area, and include some goose grid in order to keep the geese from finding it convenient to get in and out of the pond, and plant native plants, some plugs, some seeds, some wetland plants along the edge, a few tree structures. We have a little upwards of $40,000 in order to address the perimeter of that western pond. There certainly are other approaches to riprap and some other more standard things, but this was that I think we can do for this number or a little bit less, but this in keeping with a BMP application to treating that existing pond, here's a proposal that Jeff had asked about. And then second, the very last page was under the existing pond that's there, that's ringed with a concrete block retaining wall edge, about 7 units high. How can we essentially provide an emergency exit from down below to up above? So I prepared the very last page is just a sketch to take out a little piece of the wall and essentially move it over and out of the concrete blocks, get a few more blocks and essentially make ourselves stairs to get out. I think we should put it in a place that's not very obvious, because it's not access to the water, it's emergency exit from the water, so I'm not trying to create an access point to the water, but something on this order. You know, the materials is fairly minimal. It's more, you know, a week's worth of time for a crew, and all in some materials to just move and do the block walls. So again, I prepared this at one of the questions that Jeff had as a suggestion for what might be relatively easy to do that fits within the confines of what's out there. Yes.
One last question. As you were thinking through this design, did you consider turning those two retention ponds into wetlands?
No. No, I didn't, because of the depth of the water is out there already. It's obviously in the edge treatment we can plant, you know, that riparian area a little bit into the water, a little bit out. We can plant that with the wetland kind of plants, and then above that a bit other native, you know, some vegetation that's gonna take into account the different, you know, the differences, the changes in the moisture. But you have ponds out there that essentially are several feet deep, so to really turn those whole essentially lakes into wetlands would require putting fill back in and making them shallower, you know, underwater that they are. So since that was an existing situation and condition, I just took advantage of that, and no, I did not suggest making those a wetland, and so there's no resultant cost to do those either.
I understand that, but as a substitute for taking up acreage on your design there with new wetlands, just use the retention ponds.
Well, but I don't gain anything then, because you're talking about filling under the water. I mean, my stormwater detention happens from essentially the normal pool elevation up. So if I had 6 inches of water, 6 feet of water, or 36 feet of water depth in there, none of that matters. None of that counts for stormwater detention. What stormwater detention counts from the normal pool level up to how deep it's going to get. So nothing I do underwater is going to gain me a thing at all.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask for my own understanding. I know we've been talking about stormwater management for some time. I just wanted to ask two questions. Level of urgency for this operation and the existing priority level within the infrastructure plan for the county.
And I'm going to defer to Facilities Director for both of those questions because I do not have a way of answering that. What I will say is, obviously we're not going to choose between A or B tonight. It's there for people to think about, to study, and hopefully next month we have a discussion in which we receive a recommendation from our Facilities Director and our administrators for us to act upon. But the two questions that Carol asked is the level of urgency and how it fits in with, and I didn't catch the other part.
Infrastructure planning for the existing infrastructure planning for the county property right now.
I do not believe there is an emergency at this point in time. As long as the city of Urbana knows that we're working on our stormwater management plan, they're fine with it. They know that we'll eventually get it completed. And there's not a serious issue unless we come into a 50 or 100-year flood. Then we could probably get water into animal shelter, maybe Eileen's or something at that time. But that's who's guess when that's going to happen until we get this taken care of.
Sure.
When you say stormwater management plan, my mind goes to something like LRMP, meaning how are you going to deal with this water when it comes kind of thing. This seems to be more of the action than the plan. Am I understanding that correctly?
You're looking at implementing a stormwater management plan with a stormwater management project. And there are two approaches for you to select from. And this is precipitated by need because of the new building at 202 Art Bartel that has been constructed in the last year. And the budget for this stormwater management project is included in that construction project budget as well. So I think we all anticipate that we would get it done by the end of 2012. Hopefully, we told the city of Urbana when we received our approvals that it was being worked on and would be done within a year of that facility being opened, right?
Yes, that is correct.
How much did we budget?
We budgeted right about $450,000.
Mr. Nitto.
You just stole my thunder. I wondered how much we bonded. We've got the bond out there. How much was that with the 450 was included in that?
Yes, Mr. Quisenberry.
So just for clarity here, what I'm hearing is that as a part of getting our permits to build the building, we committed to the city that we would manage the stormwater generated by the building. So this isn't a question of the county saying, hey, we've got stormwater that we need to take care of. This is we've created a higher demand for stormwater management, and this is the resolution that we're going to follow to take care of that. And if we don't, we are not following what we told the city we would do, and they could react in some way to that. I'm not sure how.
The city basically used the 2006 study that the county had for how it would manage its stormwater, knowing that we would include implementing parts of that plan with this construction project. Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Bergson.
back when we were first discussing this, a number of the outputs came in with estimates of like 510,000 for the piping method and 275,000 for a green. Is there a green solution that's maybe not quite as hot as best practices? Everyone was saying that it's going to cost much less.
This is strictly just one design and the opinion of the firm we chose to design it for. So, there were multiple design possibilities, and each firm, I'm sure, had who presented one had a different idea. I don't know that we can say right now that sure the next design will be half the cost. I cannot answer that. That is what they were saying at the time. That is correct.
Betsy?
Well, then what are our options of investigating that further?
The options, well, that's for this board to decide what it's going to do when it comes time to make the vote, I assume. Is that correct?
It's always up to the board.
Yeah.
Well, I know, but I'm trying to figure out how do we expand the options. All we've got is one. We never had more than one option in the sense of design. We had more than one option in the sense of professional requirements.
In order to get the information that you had presented to you this evening, you selected an engineering firm and entered into a contract with that firm to do the work required to provide you with the presentation of information that you have tonight. You went through the QBS selection process to select the engineering firm and engaged in an initial contract with that firm to bring to you the information that you have before you. You have spent $36,400 with this firm to bring to you the information that you have tonight. If you wanted to walk away from this firm, I assume we would have to go back through the QBS process and appropriately select another firm. But it's not like you can get competing recommendations from numerous engineering firms for the same project. If you all remember, we went through that training about how QBS works, and it's statutorily required for you when you're doing this type of engineering and architectural work.
Hayes, is it possible that we could go back to, say, Burns & Clance and say we'd like to have somewhat of a part A, part B, or something in between? Like obviously, they may cost us more money. Is that a possibility?
That would be something to be negotiated with Burns Clancy. They have adhered to the requirements of the contract as it was presented to them. So if you now want to ask them to do additional work on one of the options, I'm sure that's something that you could do.
Well, we wouldn't have to start the process all over. We could just...
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions on rainwater and drainage? Okay. It'll be on the agenda next month. People need to get their heads together and figure out what they want to do. Alan.
Thank you. Item B, B1, monthly reports. On page 15 is our monthly expenditure report. The only thing I'd like to point out is our utilities, which are the two largest line items we have in the physical plant budget, is that we're really close to being right on target at this point in time, a little ahead of where we were at last year.
Chair would entertain a motion to receive and place on file.
No,
moved by Mr. Jay, seconded by Mr. James. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. And the saga of the clock tower.
Well, I'm very happy to report that the finial is now in Rantoul at Taylor Studios. The insurance company finally released partial payments, and we're off and moving. Taylor Studio has ordered materials to repair it. They have submitted an improved design for review. It has been reviewed by The professors at the university, Mr. Bruce Hannon and Mr. Darren Soucy, they're very happy with their redesign for the added structure they're trying to put into it. Hopefully today or tomorrow we'll have the final blessing on that, and the estimated time for completion was, for other repair, is 6 to 8 weeks. So at that point in time, hopefully we'll have it ready to go back up on top of the clock tower.
Let us not get more lightning in a 100-year flood.
You indicated that the insurance company has released some of the money. So my question is the insurance going to cover the whole cost, or is there some cost the county will have to cover?
At this point in time, their insurance company has covered all costs that we're aware of. We still have the issue of getting it put back on, and we're going to work on that probably tomorrow to make sure we get try to get that ironed out, but so it's ready to go when the finial's ready.
Anything else in the finial? Efficiency.
Okay, I was asked a couple of months ago, it is budget time again, and I have once again supplied you with a building efficiency summary report for the courthouse in Brookings. Now, you may ask why I'm just using those two buildings. Well, because putting all the information for all of the seven of the major buildings together is a possibility. I just not have been able to do that. Other than the on page 20 is this summary, but I would like to point out on the following pages, 21 and 22, where the actual spreadsheets where I worked on. Comparing last year to this year in utilities and gas also is very difficult. Last year we did not have a contract in place for the balanced procurement program, which we started in 2010, and that's for the natural gas. So we've got 3 months of non-regulated and several months of that purchasing gas, natural gas, under the program. The electricity, we went from one contract, 3 months of 2 months of one contract into a brand new contract. Billing was completely different on electricity. Rates changed. The only thing that's consistent on these spreadsheets are the actual therms and kilowatt hours used. So it's going to be really hard to compare from last year to this year. I just want to make sure you understand that. On the summary sheet, on total cost per square foot, which was the number that was used the first 2 years I gave you the reports, we are continuing to lower the cost per square foot in both the Brookings and Courthouse for the gas, natural gas, and really holding pretty close for the cost per square foot for the electricity. I did try to incorporate cooling degree days onto this report to give you a reference, so because our cost and usage is actually relevant to the outside temperature. And what I was not able to do was try to give you an actual exact cost of the kilowatt hours per cooling degree days or the therms per heating degree days year to year. I was only able to go back 3 years on the website I was using to calculate previous year and a half report. Very close, though. I can say that as an indicator, Brookings, we went from $7.29, therms, 7.29 therms per heating degree day at in the Brookings building in 2010, to where now we're at Brookings, we're at 8.02 therms per heating degree day. So it went up just a little bit for that. Our actual cost per square foot went down. The actual therms per heating degree day went up. So it's almost too much information. Let me know. If you got any questions, I'll try to explain it for you.
Highest. Actually, you have data there in case, like electrical use that we have made improvements. I look at the courthouse. I think the courthouse has more consistent use than, say, Brookings, because Brookings has various meetings that occur not on a regular basis. Like, you know, SAMHSA comes in here more often, so our electricity use here has varied. But of course, it's going to be pretty consistent because it's basically open from 8 o'clock in the morning to 5 at night. And I'm looking at, compare 09 and 10 to 2010, 2011. If you look at the cooling degree days, they're 11.4 in 09, 010. If you look at 10 and 11, they're 16.33. That's a 45% increase. But the increase in kilowatt hours per square foot was only 10%. That means you had a big improvement in your efficiency.
That is correct.
Patsy?
I'm interested in what you, since you've been working very hard on improving the efficiency in all the buildings, what do you feel are the two things that you've done that have contributed to these savings?
The most important thing we have done, well, the two major things we have done to contribute to the savings on the electricity usage, kilowatts, is we installed light sensors, motion sensors, time switches in the courthouse and Brookins, so in all offices and at any place we could. Here at the Brookins building, we removed the large metal halide gymnasium lights and replaced them with high-efficiency T8s. And at the courthouse also, if you remember, a year and a half ago, we had to have a new building management system installed where we crashed. So we've got that back up and running. That has made a big difference there. So those are the two major things that we've accomplished in the last 2.5 years.
Just a follow-up question. It would be interesting over time, as you see these savings being generated and you keep your Excel sheet going, when the return rate starts coming back to the county for what was the county's cost. I know we got some grant money to pay for some of this, but it would be really interesting to see when we start getting our return rate on this.
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions? I'd ask that be received and placed on file.
So moved.
A move by Mr. Quisenberry, seconded by Ms. Emmons. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Anything further?
Real quick on the Art Bartel construction project.
Yes.
On the page 23 is the summary sheet construction project for the summary sheet for this entire project budget. And on the design build project itself, the corridor sink has arrived last week. Rossler has come back on site. They have completed the electrical rough-in. The plumbing rough-in should be scheduled tomorrow. The sink should be installed and cabinets in place by the end of this week is the anticipated schedule. And we are almost completely moved out of the Gill building, and by the end of September, we will be completely vacated from the Gill building and moved into the new building. So nothing else has really materialized on that.
Thank you. Mr. James.
So, Deb, when is the lease up at the Gill building?
November.
Any other questions? The next item that you should have on your desks, this is the report on the National Institute of Corrections planning of the new institutions instructional seminar that four of us attended. There's a lot of material in there. I don't expect anyone to have read the entire piece this evening. Deb Busey did a very, very fine job of summarizing much of what we did and much of what we learned while we were in Aurora. I will say we have the most incredibly capable professional staff in this county to attend a conference. Deb Busey is extraordinary. The sheriff is extraordinary. Alan is extraordinary. They just really did all their homework when they were there. I'm not as capable as they are because it's not my specialty field, but everyone was on point, asking good questions of the experts there who were from kinology and architecture and planning. They were very intense sessions from 8 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon and sometimes later. We got a lot of material. There's 4 or 5 notebooks I have, and I know Deb does, the sheriff does. We all have materials. Some of it is copyrighted material, so I don't think we can just copy it and scan it. But if people would like to look at the notebooks and take them, borrow them, I have a set, Deb has a set, and I certainly would not be adverse to loaning them out to people, because I think they're going to be quite useful in the coming year and a half, 2 years. One of the things, and it may not be true for Deb and the sheriff and our deputy, I have been to many jails as a practicing attorney over the past 35 years. I was actually counting them up, and it's almost 30 in Michigan and Illinois and what have you. And I've been to what I would consider very, very good jails, very poor jails, very mediocre jails, and very distant, strange jails, as well as facilities for the criminally insane, the Detroit House of Corrections, the Marquette facility, the largest in-wall prison in the world, which is in Jackson, Michigan. I've spent a great deal of time with clients over the years in some of these places. I thought I knew a lot about jails. I didn't even scratch the surface in my own experiential life. I learned so much in this series of seminars. I still don't know as much as I would like to know in trying to do the planning here, but I think what I did discover is none of us know everything about this field, but we have some background now, and we will know how to ask certain questions. When we get to a point where we're looking at an architect, if we get to that point, we'll know the questions that we should be asking. We'll know the questions we should be asking regarding the planning process, regarding usage statistics. Can you predict future incarceration rates? How far out can you predict them? What degree of accuracy? These are the kind of questions that we will need to ask as a board as we address these issues. Some months ago, the sheriff received the NIC report from the evaluation of our facility downtown. So we had that report. The first step in this process is recognizing that there's an issue, that we have a problem, and I think there's very few people in this room that were actually shocked by that report. I think most people knew that there were some problems in that facility. They had been ongoing. It's not a big secret. So I think we're at that recognition state. I think where we're at now is where to from here. One of the things I would encourage each of us as board members to contact the sheriff's department and take a tour of that downtown facility. Individually or as a small group, I think everyone needs to go in there. I think you need to see it. You need to understand what the problems are and what the problems aren't. Every person who I speak with, we were doing an evaluation last week, in which one of the, for budget purposes, one of the people we asked them, I believe Mr. Nudo asked the question about the jail, in terms of working in that jail. And this is not a person who is a guard or a employee of the sheriff's department, and was talking about the very real risks because of line of sight, because of structural design of that facility. I'm encouraging members of the board to take a tour, to go out there. If you've done it before, do it again. I think we need to be refreshed in how that facility operates and what the problems are, because we're going to have to develop a timeline in terms of where to from here. And I don't want us as a county to do some of the things we've done in the past, and that is put things off. That's the one thing that I got out of this conference, is trying to do a piecemeal approach, or approach that says, well, we can only afford 5 cells now, so we're not going to do anything. Those kind of approaches don't work. There are these people out there, they're called lawyers, and they love suing counties. They love suing jail systems, and you can lose a lot of money. I'm a member of that profession. I don't sue jails, but I can tell you that my profession is very happy to sue facilities for all sorts of issues. And we all know there have been very obvious problems. I think that this experience for me really opened my eyes to realizing how much work we have. This is a very significant amount of work and dedication that's going to take up from each of the board members. But most of the work is going to be done by the sheriff and his folks in terms of knowing where the need is, what the problem is, and usage statistics, things of that nature. And I expect to receive a recommendation from the sheriff regarding potentially how we're going to use that facility downtown, if we're going to use that facility, the pros, the cons, can it be brought up to date? I know Mr. Mosier's been around as long as I have, probably longer, and he knows full well that when that facility downtown was opened in 1980, it was inadequate. It was not state-of-the-art, and they cut every corner imaginable to make it, and we're paying for that now. So I wanted to share that with you. I cannot say enough about the quality of the staff that were at that conference. They just, I'm very proud to be associated with Champaign County. If Deb could do a little summary as well, I would certainly appreciate that. Pius?
I'm willing to organize a tour to the downtown jail. If county board members just want to send an email to me saying they want to go on a tour, and I'll arrange with the sheriff to set up perhaps multiple times a week where we could do that.
Okay. Thank you. Patsy?
First, thank you to both of you and the other two who put together this summary of your four or five days at this educational seminar. Between the two of you, do you think it's worthwhile for us to set a study session so you can go more in depth in a couple of hours, cover what you learned in the five days?
What do you think? I don't think we'd need a 3-hour session. I think if we shared it with another study session, yeah, I think 90 minutes maybe could be adequate if we had some other topic.
Well, I wasn't
as well.
Thinking 3 hours, but
well,
yeah.
I've been to a lot of these board meetings. Sometimes they
no, it wasn't board
out.
Meeting study session.
Yeah, I thought it was very useful. In fact, I would love it if the sheriff were to attend the four of us, because I think each of us
that would be great.
Each of us picked up different pieces of information. I have voluminous notes, and I know Deb has tons of them. And we all picked up slightly different angles on this, and there was questions. We didn't necessarily agree with everything that speakers presented. Deb, there was, I actually got into a conflict, me of all people, with one of the experts who had made a suggestion. I had asked the question because they were talking about inadequacies in facilities, and I said, well, should you publicize this? And she said, absolutely. I found that an astounding answer. So we had a good, healthy debates and conflicts, but we did all listen. It was very useful. Yes, Stephanie.
I think that would be great to go ahead and have a study session, 90-minute. I think it would be really good if we do that after we all have an opportunity to go to the downtown jail.
I think
that we'd have this really fresh in our minds. I think that would be a really good idea.
In the meantime, I do want Deb to share some of her thoughts, because she did most of the math while we were there. We had a lot of math problems, and I had forgotten all of my high school and college algebra. Deb didn't.
Well, I guess the encouraging thing about it was to acknowledge, if you go to page 5 of the report, that's where the first several pages just take you through basically a construction project process and all the stages that are involved. Some of you are familiar with that if you've been here for 15 or 20 years, because we've built so many buildings, and some of you who haven't been through a construction project may be less familiar with it. But I thought their outlines did a good job of telling you what you should be looking for at each stage in the process, and also documenting what those stages are. But from my perspective, starting on page 5, just where our county team kind of did an assessment of where we are, we believed, and we all concurred when asked, that we are at the beginning stages of needs assessment. We are through the first phase, which is, you know, project recognition. We recognize that there is a problem. You have received reports which document that a problem exists, and we're currently at the needs assessment phase. And there is a lot of that work that can be done by our own staff, and the sheriff and I and Tom are all committed to doing as much as we can up to the point of requiring the assistance of consultants, which we will require that assistance at some point. But in the meantime, the sheriff and his staff are doing everything they can to collect historical data so that we can identify trends and begin working on an assessment of not only what our future needs are in terms of population, but what kind of needs do they have in terms of the type of facility that we offer to them. So, you know, our downtown facility currently is comprised of all of those beds are maximum security single cell beds. So do we have to build more of those? Well, probably not. And that's part of the assessment that we do moving forward. The other thing, the advantage we have over most of the other counties that were there, is that we do believe we have identified the funding for this project, and we're working on confirming that within the existing public safety sales tax fund, that it will be able to absorb the cost of the replacement of the downtown beds. That is information that I'm working on now. We'll have it for you. Probably would have it by the time we did a study session, at least to some extent. But that does not, that provides a benefit to Champaign County in that you, the board, if you decide to proceed with this project, do not have to go to the voters and get a referendum passed for this particular project. You probably already have the funding available, or at least a majority of it. So that's just kind of our current assessment, and you can see in the report then how we see moving forward at least through the first three phases of developing this project.
Alan?
Well, I just want to briefly echo what Tom said, and that is, this reminds me when I first came on the board of the nursing home issue, where we had a long period of indecision and a long period of just moving along with the status quo. And I think it's going to take an organized effort to put some timelines on this. And, you know, you've got phases here, and I think we ought to establish some timelines for each phase and do it along the same lines of the nursing home. It's in the same mode crisis as the nursing home. There's no question about it, because of the facilities that we have in the downtown facility, just as asking for a disaster of some magnitude if we don't do something about it relatively quickly. We can put some timelines on this and organize this. So I agree with what Tom said.
Mr. Mosher.
I had lunch with Don Flessner and Bud Barker about what they went through before that facility was built. Mr. Flessner's comment was, don't wait, because when the Department of Corrections shows up and condemns the one you got, then you're really under the gun. You need to get on this and get on it quickly and get it solved. And the criticism they got was unjustified in the 70s, because they sat there and looked at the jail before this jail, and they looked at the courthouse, and they couldn't do anything about it because they didn't have the money, and they couldn't pass a referendum. And that facility down there is just a result of trying to scrape together what money they could to build it as fast as they could, and they know they made a lot of mistakes. And he said, don't do that again. Do it right, but get on it and do it.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? Well, I do appreciate the comments, and I like the idea that in discussing this in terms of a timeline, I think that's something we talked about at the conference, is that a timeline would be necessary. I think it's going to be necessary for this board to know the material that we have here, so I think a study session is not a bad idea. The sheriff is gathering data for us. I think probably the first significant decision after we have some data is going to be whether or not we keep that downtown facility, whether it can be remodeled, whether it can be sold, and is there an add-on to the facility out here? Do we do nothing? I think those are some of the decisions that are going to have to be made relatively soon. Carol?
The jail is a huge issue. I've been through both of them several times for the obvious reason, based on the folks who end up in it. However, this proposal, much like the previous, does not even deal with pros and cons as to whether we should build or not. The assumption, as Mr. Muto said, is put timelines on this process, which assumes that the county board has voted to build a new facility and close one of them in this projected timeline of how the process should go. I think that's a concern for me, if it's not for anybody else. The assumption is that we have everything we need to go ahead with some project here. The other thing is that the discussion seems to carefully stay away from the social impact of jails and communities. And I don't know if this conference did anything at all to paint the picture of 1 in 4 African Americans ending up in the jail system, whether they're youth or adult, based on various ways, of which I won't illustrate at this point. I think that there needs to be more actual public discussion on this outside of this boardroom, because this is, in often cases, as you see the county courthouse, a very life-changing situation where people who are, in many cases, nonviolent offenders end up in this facility for one reason or another. So looking at it from just a building perspective, I don't think it's going to last very long. The other thing is that I'm really surprised to hear that instead of using the quarter cent sales tax for preventative uses, we would shift that money into a building. And that had not come up in a discussion anywhere up until this point. So those are two things that I think the public really needs to be aware of, that, of course, we don't have any money to bond over these things, but we'll bond them on the back of the poor people that will end up in this facility who can't pay to get out of it. So we should not ignore that there's a real issue here outside of just four walls and a building that you're considering.
Just to let you know, Carol, every step of the way at this conference, and Doug can verify it, I had my hand up asking the very questions you asked.
But there's no report on
that. Well, I'm sorry it's not there, but I asked that question repeatedly, how jails are used. And the question gets down to, what authority do you as a county board have with regard to how jails are used? And that's the question. We are not the judges who sentence folks. We are not the police department who capture folks. We are not the criminal justice system. We don't even actually run the jail. The sheriff's department has that authority. We pay for the jail as a county board. This is one of those areas where we get the blame, but we don't have a huge amount of authority. But these questions in terms of disparity and racial impact were asked at that conference on more than one occasion. And I think they're legitimate questions. The problem, the difficulty I have is we can not control the state legislature, which repeatedly and regularly passes mandatory sentencing for various nonviolent offenses, sometimes only because there's a repeat offense, and they're traffic offenses, but they've done it three times and they still do it, then there's going to be jail. And yes, we do have a large number of traffic offenders in jail. I don't particularly like that, but it is a reality. I argue against it in my daily life. The reality is there are mandatory sentences. We have judges that are required to uphold the law. We have state's attorneys and defense attorneys. That's a reality. And I don't think it's really likely to change anytime soon. Even if it does change, it doesn't change the nature and quality of the facility that we have downtown. That facility is not a good quality facility for inmates to be in. It is not not optimum, is to put it awfully generously. How the enforcement, the racial disparity in enforcement, is a societal issue that is not just Champaign. It is much of the country. Not building jails and not having safe facilities to have people serve their time and or await sentencing does not solve that problem. Putting them in unsafe facilities doesn't solve it either. There is a social issue. I acknowledge it. It's huge. But the jail is separate from that. Mr. Esri.
Thank you. You basically said what I was going to say. And I mean, if you harken back to when Sheriff Walsh was here, he himself said he would prefer, in a lot of cases, to use home incarceration with the ankle bracelets, but that option's been taken away from him here just recently with a lot of the cases. He has nothing to say. He himself cannot do anything about that. We as a board cannot do anything about that. We're providing the building to basically serve as a place to house these people. We don't, as a county, decide who goes in that building.
Mr. Moncker?
I wish some more of you that were in this, when I got on this board with O'Connor and Lloyd and Lorraine, we spent half our time in here trying to figure out if we were going to double bunk in that old building or whether we were going to take Coles County and Ford County and any other county that had room in a jail to take these people. We didn't have any choice, and we spent thousands and thousands of dollars and wasted thousands of dollars of deputies' time hauling prisoners to Paxton or Charleston or Clinton, and they added on to their jail with what we paid them. And if the Department of Corrections comes in and says, this thing isn't going to work anymore, that's the option you got. And it was chaos. And when we got this new one finally done, we stopped that. But it was a huge, huge burden on the budget and on the sheriff's time and his deputy's time shuffling these people to court and back to Ford County and trying to decide who was going to go to Paxton and who was going to go to Charleston and who we're going to keep here. And we've been down this road with ankle bracelets with Sheriff Madigan. He didn't like them. Sheriff Walsh likes them. Some judges like it. Some judges don't like it. But not doing anything is the poorest excuse we can come up with, because when the Department of Correction says, I'm not going to let you use that jail anymore, you're going to do something else, and the alternatives are limited and they're certainly not good.
Carol? I just wanted to go back and say again that regardless of how many laws the state legislature passes, we will never be able to keep up with the number of laws they pass every single year to incarcerate more people. We won't keep that up. We won't be able to build a facility large enough for every single law they pass. So that is not really the argument. The argument that I'm raging here is that there are no actual recommendations for repairing the downtown jail in front of us. We don't have any to actually consider right now.
Because we're not at that point.
Right, but what we are considering is a timeline to build a new one.
No, that's not at all true. No.
That is
it
not,
says project recognition, facility development process.
Project could be remodeled.
It could be remodeled, yeah.
It could be adding another floor.
There's nothing in it that says it's a new.
So my concern is that there needs to be a complete presentation of fixing this facility. When I call, and I do call and check the stats of how many people are in downtown and how many are at the satellite, we call each week, and they are never over full. They're not full currently. So if we have beds currently and we need to do repairs, we need to consider those repairs really carefully before we consider adding new beds to this process.
Well, one, I think you're presuming that we're adding new beds, because that is we have not done a needs assessment to determine whether we need new beds or not. What we do know is we have a very difficult facility there. In terms of, I agree with you on the state legislative issue, they're always going to be passing laws. And it's because the public thinks mandatory sentencing is the answer to everything. It's a gimmick. I agree with you on that. I don't think we can build ourselves out of that particular problem until we start educating ourselves about how we use jails. But again, it gets back to the facility that we have downtown. We do need a needs assessment there. We do need a determination of whether it can be remodeled, whether it would be effective, cost-effective to do that, especially while it is in use. I've heard stories that it was designed so you could build another floor on it. I have never seen any evidence that is actually true, but I'd like to find that out. I would definitely like to see, is it possible, and what would it cost to have it assessed to determine whether or not we can do anything with that facility? Mr. Nuda.
I didn't get that feeling, Carol, and I think on page 7, under phase 3, the first item, it says jail site selection. The county board will need to make the determination of the site for the new / replacement beds. In our current situation, a decision as to whether to replace the current downtown correctional beds at a satellite jail or to remodel the downtown correctional center. Deb has just outlined three phases that we still have control over decision making. I don't sense at all that there's a decision made today that it's going to be new or replacement. I honestly think that's she's laid this out with the prospect it could be either.
Mr. James.
Well, following up on Carol a little bit, I've always said when the state or anybody mandates stuff, we follow along because we have to. And I'm like you, Carol. I want to know, why can't we change the way business is done? Like what you're saying, there could be different setups for people, but instead of being incarcerated. But it's just the way it is, and then we all sort of have to march to that dime, like it or not. And like Tom's saying, we're only chartered to do so much, and we have to do it one way or the other. But I agree with you in a lot of things, like schools, taxes, anything. They say, here's what you need to do, and here's how you're going to do it. And instead of looking at the bigger picture and saying, what can we do to make this better?
Mr. Kurtz.
Tom, Deb, went out at this point under the gun. Is there anything imminent that we might be in trouble with the Department of Corrections, as Mr. Mosier states, that we've had wasn't the Justice or Department of Corrections go through and did a survey of the jail and came up with some
Obviously, you all have seen the NIC.
I'm sorry, what was that, Tom?
You've seen the NIC report. I don't want to broadcast our obvious violations to the world again.
Well, I'm just saying that could it be imminent that we could be under the gun that they say we got to start moving those prisoners out?
Things happen all the time. I don't want to. I'm not an expert in that particular area. What I will say, what is eminent, is if we are going to use quarter cent money, it's roughly 2015 that you do it. The planning process for whether you're remodeling, or rebuilding, or adding on to the facility that we have out here is going to take that 2 or 3 years. So the idea that we can wait 6 months before starting to plan is a big mistake.
No, I agree.
We really have to begin that process now.
Do we need a committee to put that together?
No, we don't need a committee, not yet.
Okay.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Mr. Chairman, I think this discussion has become repetitive, and if we could talk about this more at a study session, I think that would be appropriate.
And I totally agree. Thank you for the comments. They were all good, all interesting. We will try to have a study session and have the sheriff here, and we will try to find out more information regarding the downtown facility and its possible status. In terms of other business, I don't have other business, and there's nothing for actual action.
I'm wondering if the board would not mind doing a closed session right now. I think it's probably going to be a short closed session. It's going to be very short. If we get that over, then we'll go back and do ELOC. Mr. President, just turn the camera off and turn it back on. Is there any objection to that? Okay, Mr. McGinty.
I move that we enter into executive session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C11 to consider litigation which is probable or imminent against Champaign County. I further move that the following individuals remain present: County's legal counsel, County Administrator, and Recording Secretary.
Second.
Second by Mr. Alex. Roll call, please. Whoop, caught you off guard, didn't we?
Hey, Tyler.
Yes, showed up.
Bannon? Yes. Vincent?
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. James?
No.
James?
Yes.
Jones? Kurt?
Yes.
Myanmar?
Yes. Yes.
Munger?
Yes.
Nudo?
Yes.
Hunter?
Yes.
Teacher? Quisenberry?
Yes.
Yes.
Rosales? Schrader?
Yes.
Schrader? Yes, motion carries.
The 6th County, East Illinois Economic Development District Intergovernmental Agreement. I'd like to move.
Motion to approve.
Bias. Lorraine is second. Do we have any discussion?
Just one minor point. When I was looking through the contract, I did notice there's language in paragraph 2C that indicates that alternate members who show up when the designated member can't show up do have a full vote. They are allowed full participation in the committee. That's great. It's something I would like to see the county begin to insist on, or at least attempt to insist on, in all these organizations in which we participate in, because my understanding is that there are organizations in which we participate where if an alternate shows up, the alternate's not officially a member of that board and cannot vote. So I would like to thank these guys for doing this, but let's see if we can't try to get that into more agreements as we move forward.
Thank you. Any other? Ms. Petrie?
A couple of clarification questions since we just received this. Is this just the same contract as previously?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Is this the same type of contract that previously existed, or is this a brand new contract?
I have no knowledge of. Tyus, do you?
I believe Ms. Shelburne.
Do you know? Do you have a response?
I'm the executive director of the EDD, and yes, this is largely the same as what's existed. You all approved a document that talked about the same kind of composition and voting and board back in 2008 and approved it. This just kind of updates it to our current status as an EDD that has certain voting requirements through the Economic Development Administration, and also just takes into account the full Illinois statutes as they apply now rather than years ago. But it's generally the same thing.
So this isn't something annually that comes to the board?
No, it's not.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Mr. Jay.
Mr. Chairman, does this cost us anything?
Not that I don't think it costs us any, the county anything.
Zero.
Jay's four. That should get your vote, right, Mr. Jay?
Probably not.
Any further discussion? I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Jay. A little levity can't hurt at this hour. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. But not on the consent agenda. All right, let's move to the next item. Under 10A, approval of the FY 2012 RPC planning contract.
Second.
I'm sorry, who's first? Tom and James, second. Discussion, please. Mr. Mosier.
We eliminate some of these things that Mr. Nudo recommended. Could we lower the amount of that contract to reflect what's been taken out?
Please don't. Yes, that is your prerogative to absolutely cut this contract in any way you see fit. But we do feel like we have a robust planning process here to help you to improve and to resolve things in your communities.
Mr. Nudo.
My distribution of the sheet prior at the study session was not for substitution or addition of the hours. It was for further discussion as to what this. I think we had one of the better meetings that we have had in a long time of everybody getting a full idea of what the planning was for, and a number of people missed that. And I am not sure tonight if this is the night that we pass everything as discussed. Steve, I did not submit it for the purpose of substituting all the hours. And as I said earlier, that group of people that met were just making comment as to the viability of each priority. It has no bearing on. I wanted to get more discussion, frankly. So I have other comments, but I'm going to hold back and get this portion discussed, and then I'll wait until everybody else has spoken. Thank you.
Further discussion? Ms. Petrie.
Well, I expressed my concerns during the study session as to this continuation of contracts with RPC, and I would much prefer part of our discussion this evening be that this monies be moved to the County Planning and Zoning Office so that that office is the central location of all the planning for the county, and when necessary, when we need something way out of the ordinary, then we do contract planning, and this is contract planning. Part two of my comment is when I read through here, again, even though some of it's been adjusted to the comments that were made at the study session, and I agree with Mr. Nudo, it was one of the best of the study sessions that we've had. The conversation was very robust. there's still much here that can be done by any planner. We don't need the RPC. Most of it is really not major long-term planning, which is what I'm being told the RPC is supposedly doing, though I get mixed comments as to what the RPC role is and what our county planning and zoning department is. And there's still things that are being mentioned in here that are being done by other entities, so I'm still very concerned about all the money that we as a county board have been approving to the RPC, when over time, when I add that up, we could have had a very robust county planning and zoning department of our own, which would have a great deal of flexibility to it. And then in addition, this amount of money is only for 32 weeks, which I mentioned during the study session. This would be a full-time planner, and we would still have change, in which the planning department then could start getting some interns, which I've mentioned on previous time, that we don't see happening with our planning department.
Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you. What's that? Do you want to respond, sir?
If I might.
Please do.
Okay. The Regional Planning Commission, we do multifaceted planning. We do long-term, we do short-term. We do pieces of the planning process. We might help identify problems, take people through public input to try to gather the research necessary to make good decisions. We've taken the Champaign County all the way through the LRMP planning process up through implementation, and we're starting in on that. And we also help with monitoring how that planning process has evolved. So we are a multifaceted agency. Now, at the Regional Planning Commission, with this contract that is before you, we have three staff members, myself, Andrew Levy, and Susan Monty, who have 30 years of combined experience in planning and a lot of local knowledge to bring you what you need when you need it. That $70,550 that you have before you, yes, is for about two-thirds of a full-time person, okay, or a full-time equivalent. But what you would be able to get with that money, if you were to take that money back to your zoning department, is the equivalent of a $40,000 to $45,000 salary, because I've been told that the county budget, in terms of what it would expend on a planner, is very similar to what the RPC expends on a planner. You would be looking at, for $40,000 to $45,000, possibly a master's student with possibly 1 year of experience in planning, whereas you're getting 30 years of experience through us. You're getting the tools like GIS and all the different hardware, software, and best planning practices that we study to bring to you. So there's a big difference between what you're going to be able to get if you move to paying a planner versus what you get with us.
Thank you. Let's go to Mr. McGinty, please. You want to respond back, Ms. Petrie?
Point of order. Point of order. This is not a debating club.
No, I'm sorry.
I said I was
Nudo. Mr. Nudo, Mr. Nudo, I'll chair, please. Thank you. Patsy, thank you. I'm going to go to Mr. McGinty. Please.
Thank you, Susan. I can't even express, I don't even know how to express the level of disagreement I have with Patsy on this. For the very reasons that Susan mentions, they do so much more for us. But I keep forgetting because I know I'm not going to get petty about it. I'll just emphasize that I disagree.
Mr. James.
Following up on Brendan, I was going to say the same thing when you just broke that out. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. We're always talking here about using people from the U of I and everything else because of their wealth of knowledge and what they have there. We shouldn't be going out and, you know, hiring staff and doing more. And with your background and what the knowledge you have and being invested in our community, in my mind, says a lot. Do I always agree with everything that's here? No. But for the most part, someone's got to do some of it. And thank you for the job you're doing.
Any other discussion? Mr. Quisenberry.
I'd like to ask Mr. Hall if he agrees with that assessment.
I do.
Thank you. With the summary that Susan made.
Yes.
I'm sorry, did you finish your comment?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Ms. Busey.
This is just a point of information, but you're looking at 32 weeks of service with this contract, correct? That's what's being proposed. I just want you to be aware that with the benefits that Champaign County provides to its employees, a 52-week-a-year employee works 38 weeks if they use all their benefits. So there's not a substantial difference between a 52-week. I just wanted you to have that information as you look at this.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor? I'm sorry. Mr. O'Connor? I didn't see you.
Thanks, Al. I was just wanting to say that some of the stuff we're paying for here is of question, well, do we need it? We haven't got very deep into that part yet, so we're buying a pig and a poke here if we go ahead and approve this without some further discussion.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Ms. Holderfield.
I guess I've missed something. First of all, I'm not quite sure what we're going to be voting on. And secondly, we did have during our study session items that we did question as to whether or not we wanted to utilize our PC. Which if we didn't utilize, because we've got some redundancy that's going on between other entities as well as RPC, so should we not determine whether or not this contract from RPC is going to be the most prudent contract to utilize? Should we not take a second look at the RPC contract and determine which of these items should be removed, thereby reducing the amount of the actual RPC contract that's before us today?
Thank you. Any further discussion? Mr.
I hear a number of people making comments, which I agree with, to the effect that this does not appear to be something that's in a form suitable to the actual job. And I would like to get some clarification from you or from Ms. Chawla or Susan, somebody. What are we voting on here? I mean, this is not a contract and a work plan. This is a contract and a rambling discussion about maybe the board should do this or maybe the board should do that. I mean, at what point will this be in a form that we are being, where we can act on it, and what steps do we need to take at this point to get this into a point that we can act on it?
If it pleases the board, I can spell out our recommendation in a much more concise manner that this memo and its attachments provide, because it is an assimilation of a different ELUC meeting, a study session, and all the input we've received since. So if you'd like me to break it down in terms of, I'd like you to pass the contract, that's the easy one. But there's another thing in this memo that is, we would like you to look at the passage of certain items, and then we have other items that we would recommend passing that go along with the input we've received to date.
I'm sorry if I could follow up. So, again, I'm confused. Are you asking us to approve a contract for 1,310 hours with the priorities to be determined later, or are you asking for a complete verdict from the board on how to prioritize all the items in this work plan?
We are tonight, if I had my way about it, we would have an approval of the contract as well as the work plan. That's typically how it's gone in other years.
Any further discussion? Mr. Nudo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I said earlier, I did want to say to the board that I submitted this handout on the basis of discussion with four or five other people for the same purpose that we had at the study session. You can see on page 42, 43, 44, and 45, there's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of questions or comments in the comment section. And again, I would highly recommend we have another study session, since these are the substitute items that are supposedly going to fill the full budget. Now, somebody mentioned, I think Mr. Mosier mentioned, that do we want to do the full 70,000? That's, I think, something for discussion, as Mr. Alex pointed out. But that study session was a great session, and I think we should continue it with these substitute items that we have before us that I submitted. So, as a part of this group, and I would think that tonight's not the night to pass this. I would have another study session. Thank you. That's all I have.
I'm willing to do whatever you would like to do, of course. I would like to point out that in the interest of moving this document forward after the study session, we did provide recommendations that are on the basis of Mr. Nudo and his group's questions. And so with that, in trying to move things along, we selected certain items that would add up to the hours needed to fill the gaps that are identified by removing items that the study session representatives mentioned. So if you would look on page 27, there's a table of items that were all marked as yes by Mr. News Group. And that's what we focused on in order to provide the quickest time estimates and everything that you'd like to have in order to make your decisions, whereas the rest of the items in Mr. News table do have either an okay or a no or more substantive questions that we couldn't answer right away. So we would suggest that you would choose two of the three sets that are sitting here for a total of 140 hours if you would like to go that way, just to expedite things. But I'm not looking to expedite things, but it is a way of doing it. We are looking for a total of 335 hours to fill the gaps removed by the study session and also the removal of the 415, 416, and 419, the 1 per 40 question that was removed back in June.
Petrie.
Well, I move a substitute motion that the board not consider this contract until after we have another study session to review all of these aspects.
Point of order.
Mr. Pine.
I think more appropriate might be just to defer the motion.
Yes.
From Ms. Petrie.
Thank you for that advice.
To a specific time.
I move to defer the motion until after a study session on the contract and the contents thereof.
Second. Well, we already had one study session, and half the board didn't show up for that. We hope the next board would, if there is a study session. Do we have a second on that motion, Ms. Holderfield?
Well, point of order, I think a motion to defer requires a specific time and date. I think you could defer. I think a motion to defer requires a specific time and date to which you're deferring. And you could defer to the next. You could defer to the next cow or a subsequent cow.
Deferring to the next study session. October cow.
Oh, and before I do that, is it possible to have a study session before then? Okay, then the next October COW meeting, which is what, the 4th of October? Thank you.
I second the motion to defer.
Didn't we have a second?
We already had a second. I'm sorry, my apologies.
That's okay. Discussion on that substitute motion. Mr. Pines.
I don't support the motion, I think, because we can. I like to discuss some of the items that we sort of agree upon, so we need to get those out of the way. Because if we don't do that, then we have to do that next time. We've got some items that apparently we want done, so let that be known. We haven't done that yet. We haven't selected anything from here at all. And we're here meeting, so why don't we at least do that? Get partway through the list, and then if we want to defer the things we can't decide upon, that's fine. So I'd say we vote against that motion right now.
Mr. J, did you say you?
Well, Pius is getting me all nervous, but I'm calmed down now. Thank you, Mr. Weibel. I'm having a difficulty with this whole problem, and I've been quiet because I wasn't able to make that study session. Believe it or not, I do have another life outside of the county board. But I would support deferring this to a study session because there's a lot of things in here that I just can't swallow and more to the point, can't understand.
Any other discussion? Okay, we sort of got a tie over here. Let's go with the lovely lady first, Ms. Berkson.
Most of the objections seem to be things that we thought we had settled at the start.
Mr. Betts.
I'm trying to figure out what a study session is going to solve. I think the people who are opposed to this contract, my suspicion it has very little to do with the actual substance of the work. They don't support zoning, which is fine. I just wonder what we're actually going to accomplish in another study session.
just Alex.
My point, and I apparently have deeply offended my colleagues by not coming to the study session, for which I apologize profusely, but in order for something to be in a form that the board has to take action on, it has to be, you know, deterministic what it is, right? It needs to be, we're going to spend this many hours on this. That is not what was brought to us tonight and what we're being asked to vote on. This is a sort of a number of competing proposals stapled together, as far as I can tell. And if you ask, what would a study session accomplish? Well, one thing a study session might be able to accomplish is to get this into motion form, into something that we can actually vote on.
Mr. Mosher.
I want to delay it because there's so much ambiguous language in the Section 8 and 9 of that LMP with items in there that this board has no control over. This board has not got the ability to enforce any of this. And the third thing is, it's never going to see the light of day in a zoning ordinance. I just don't see why we want to put things out there that the EPA or the railroad or water laws in Illinois are going to affect when we have no control over. They're getting paid to do that. We're not. We don't have an expert here to do it. And we sure don't have the money to go out and hire an expert. And the things that are, some of these things, environmental things in here, are just out of the scope of possibility of this board.
Any further discussion on the substitute motion?
Roll call.
Roll call. Roll call. Have a roll call vote.
Motion to defer.
This is a roll call vote on the motion to defer. A yes means we defer, and a no means it fails. Okay?
Roll call, please.
Yes.
I'm sorry, can't hear you.
No.
Beth?
No.
Howard?
No.
Esri?
Yes.
Holderby?
Yes.
James?
No.
James?
Yes.
Jones? Kurt?
No.
Langenheim?
No.
Maxwell?
Yes.
Mr. Lindsay?
No.
Michaels?
Yes.
Ditto?
Yes.
O'Connor?
Yes.
Silverberry?
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Gonzalez?
No.
Schrader?
Yes.
Weiner?
No.
Motion passes 11-10. We defer this until the next COW with the study session in between. What's that? September 27th will be the second study session on this item. Susan?
What was that date? December the 22nd?
No,
I'm sorry, I'm such a bad student.
Yeah, it's okay, Mr. James.
I heard the question of putting this in a format that's something that you can move on and make it happen. I've learned that I can make no such presumption about what you all are going to want. Your 27 different rights, and I accept that, and we move, you know. But so are you looking for me to provide different options of very set things, or are you going to somehow assimilate this and come back to me at the study session with information? I guess I'm looking for how to best give this information to you for the study session, if there's any input at all.
Can we make that at this point? Mr. James?
Well, I would say the list is sort of put together and you put a time frame and you know which ones that were flat out rejected. I would just go with what you have and put it in that format and then let this board decide which items that you're bringing forward that we, like we did before, we could say yes or no. We feel like this is a value based on how many hours we have remaining.
It's kind of a chicken and the egg thing with that because we have with no votes, I had to just simply say, this is what you said, but I can't make the decision of whether it was up or down officially. And so another study session is going to take us a little bit further down that same track.
Right.
So I'd be happy to...
A lot of chickens in here. Slow down. Slow down. Okay. Let's go. Pius.
I think clarification here for how to handle this parliamentarily. We don't really have to have a complete motion in the handout saying this is what we're going to do. We just have to have a motion on the floor that would say, we're going to give 360 hours of RPC time for what they recommend, just to get us started. And once we have that, then we can add stuff, take stuff away. So the mere fact that it's not in the documentation doesn't mean we can't do that. I'm not saying that what we did tonight is wrong, but just to clarify, it doesn't have to be in writing. But the motion that's on the floor has to state what we want to do. That's the important part.
All right. I have Mr. Nudo, Ms. Holderfield, Ms. Petrie, and Mr. Alex in that order. Mr. Nudo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The list that I submitted at the end of the study session on 42 through 45 had yeses on the basis of four people. And so I didn't feel at this stage that I don't want to be presumptive, but if that's the basis, because this was the substitute list that we were given as to other priorities that the other things had been knocked out. So if you take a look at this list and you asked how to do this, if you want to put all the yeses first and then the noes second, then any group of any number of people could say, no, I want the no in here. I'd like to have, that considered. But these are the substitute items, and during the study session, that's what should be considered. And you can do the same thing you did so well the last time, and that is explain what the planning really meant. And we got a lot out of that. I felt we did.
Ms. Holderfield?
Pretty much the same thing, but couldn't it be like a menu of options? Is that something that is absolutely unrealistic so that you can build on top of what Mr. Nuda has suggested through the pages that were presented with the yeses and the noes and how-tos and so forth? Can't you build on that with a menu of, if you did decide to do that, this is how much it would cost, and then we can make a selection as to whether or not we should do something relative to those options?
Ms. Petrie?
Yes, I have a question of clarification. The way the document's written, it seems to be set in stone, the number of hours, and we're supposed to fill in things in case we take things out. Why is the 13-10 hours set in stone?
It's set by who would do the work and their salary and how many hours, the amount of money, assuming you would approve $70,550, the amount of hours that are allowed by that wage for that number of hours. And we're not going to make the assumption, I'm not going to assume that you're going to definitely go with $70,550, but that's to make this is what I used, the information I had.
Alex.
I just want to point out that the only tool that we have at our disposal is an up or down vote. So, this has to come to us in a form. It could be, if there's 20 items, it can be 20 up or down votes on whether to include a given item in the plan or not. Or it could be one up or down vote on a consensus list or a semi-consensus list that comes out of a study session with people able to make, substitute motions and motions to amend. But I think for this to be something that we can actually move through this board in a format that's not totally unwieldy, it has to sort of fall into one of those two categories. It either has to be a, yes or no on each of these, 20 things, and we add up the hours at the end, and that's the amount of the contract. Or it has to be, we approach this as, we're going to spend this much, here's how we're going to spend it, and then accept substitute motions to add or delete portions. But I don't think it has to be, if we were to pass this tonight, it would not be clear to me what we had passed. And that's what I would like to see addressed at this, upcoming study session.
Guys? No. Okay.
Mr.
Any
Kurtz?
Further discussion?
Yes, please.
I'm sorry.
Ms. Holderfield's comment that we should provide estimates for the 39 items in the back. We provided the estimates for the 22 items that were originally in the work plan introduced back in June and discussed at the study session. If you want me to go to that detail, it has already been 50 hours of time out of this planning contract to come this far with that amount of estimates. If you're asking me to do another 39 items, you're going to be taking another large chunk out of this, what we would be providing in usual technical services for the rest of this year in going toward that. I am perfectly happy to do that. I just want you to be aware that this is coming back to you.
Okay, let's move on. Item D1. Request to amend Champaign County Zoning Ordinance, Zoning Case 683-AT-11. Petitioner, Champaign County Zoning Administrator. This is the Zoning Board of Appeals voted to recommend enactment of this proposed zoning ordinance, text amended on their meeting of July 14th, 2011. Have someone move, please. So move, Ms. Petrie. Second, Mr. Rosales. Discussion. Ms. Petrie.
Well, I just want to point out to everybody, since I have been appointed to the LISA Update Committee, that this particular action has a great deal of reference to LISA, and I would strongly encourage that we not take action on this tonight until the LISA Committee finishes their work on the update, and then we will know exactly what kinds of definitions and what number is being chosen by the LISA committee for best prime farmland, and then we can act accordingly on this document and have it corrected if that's necessary.
Thank you, Ms. Petrie. Any other discussion? Mr. Weibel.
Mr. Hall, could you comment on that the logical action, or is there a different way we could do it?
Well, you could certainly stall and not take action on this. But every day that our office is in operation, we're using LISA every day. This amendment that's in front of you doesn't make it any more of a problem. Holding it off doesn't make it any less. However, and I have to say, it's not clear exactly what, to me, what Ms. Petrie is referring to. LISA, that acronym, occurs throughout this amendment. It isn't proposing any new changes. It's only actually referencing LISA as it already exists. The overall and well-suited overall, as far as I know, LISA won't affect that. So you don't have to take action on this, but I really don't see why you wouldn't.
Mr. Quisenberry.
So for a little more clarification on that, if we pass this tonight and eventually the LISA committee updates their definition, would that apply at that point because that's what you would be operating off of?
Well, first of all, tonight you wouldn't be approving it anyhow. It would just be a recommendation. And again, it's not clear to me that any part of this amendment would have to be changed once there's an updated LISA. The only part that I believe would clearly have to be either reaffirmed or changed is the definition of best prime farmland. This amendment, while it is adding the definition to the zoning ordinance, you folks know that we talk about best prime farmland every zoning case that comes before you. And so you could hold off on this amendment, but we're going to still be talking about best prime farmland every day in the zoning department because it's already in the ordinance.
Mr. Alex?
John, what would be very useful in these, in both of these cases that were brought tonight, going and looking through the ZBA record, there's a section in this boilerplate called Summary of the Proposed Amendment. And in both cases tonight, the summary of the proposed amendment is, the proposed amendment is attached to the finding of fact as it will appear in the zoning ordinance. that's not a summary of the proposed amendment. I mean, I have read through these to the, and understood them to the best of my ability, but as you know, these are not written to be understood by laymen. They're written to be understood by planners and lawyers. And it would be very useful. I mean, based on my understanding of what I think this says, I'm going to support it tonight, but it would be very useful if we could get a summary from you in terms suitable for a layman or even worse for a county board member saying, this amendment does X, and we're doing it because Y.
Thank you.
This is a technical amendment to tighten up the description of this because this is happening. Would make it a lot easier to, I think, achieve a level of comfort with these amendments on the part of the board. And I apologize if I'm the only member of the board who thinks he needs that, but it would certainly be useful.
At the risk of making a long attachment even longer, I'd be happy to provide all of the previous memos that the board saw in their deliberations about whether or not this work should be done.
I'm sorry, I'm not talking about historical trail, I guess. I'm talking about a brief summary of what this amendment does. I mean, when I read about this in the paper tomorrow, saying the board passed an amendment that, what would that sentence say?
Okay, I thought we had made that clear in the previous meeting, so we can... We'll make sure that we include that every
clearly
time.
Clearly, there's a failure to communicate here, which maybe we should talk about on another occasion, but I don't think it is anywhere in this thing that we're being asked to vote on. Is there a clear, concise statement that an average member of the public or even an average member of this board could point to and say, here's what we're doing?
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Jay.
Well, I can't pass up this rare opportunity, Chris. This is one of the things that's concerned me since the very start of all of this LMRP was that we do not explain things very clearly. And John knows I've complained and complained and complained about the way that we present these things, you're not improving this any. So I do concur and understand what's just been said. I just wish you folks could get that message that we need it clearer and plainer. Thank you.
Further discussion. Ms. Holderfield.
Of course, the text has changed, but I guess I find some difficulty with the statement on page 46 in the status. In the second paragraph, the Committee of the Whole authorized the main part of this text amendment at the March 8, 2011 meeting, and then evidently something was added and underscored. The recommended amendment differs from the amendment authorized by the committee, and then there's more discussion that follows. So the recommended amendment, so ZBA had an opportunity to tweak and change the proposal to turn it into an ordinance, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we've just basically received the changes to sift through the changes that were recommended by ZBA to come to the this committee, the board, and whether or not all of these additions and underlines should be added to the actual ordinance itself. Is that correct?
I think the only change that the ZBA added is under a bold heading on page 47. They added three definitions that this committee did not see previously. That's the only change that the ZBA added.
Okay, so the attachment, a recommended zoning ordinance text amendment, strikeout version, August 29th, 2011, on page 48, and then on page 49, attach a draft zoning ordinance text amendment, July the 8th, 2011. There just have been quite a few changes. It appears to me, and I guess there's no real clarity as to what we, you know, authority basically we have to make recommendations whether or not we like what's been added.
You have every authority to accept or reject this.
Okay.
You could remand it back to the ZBA.
Okay.
And as far as the headings, I apologize. There weren't enough changes made. Page A1 has the heading dated August 29th. Page A2 has the old heading dated July 8th. I apologize for that.
Okay, see, this is why it's very confusing, because there's no clarity. So pardon me if I seem a bit confused, and maybe some other people that are here this evening on the board are a little confused, because there is no delineation of exactly what you're asking for us to do and how these changes have come about.
And actually, to follow up on that comment and Mr. Alex's comment, in the future, what this amendment does is always discussed in the finding of fact. In the future, we'll pull that out as a separate item so that it's easier to find, but that is always in the finding of fact, because if you don't understand what the amendment is doing, then there is a big problem, I agree. Previously, we thought it was enough just to have it embedded in the finding of fact.
Okay, and then I also have on page 49, 2H, we've changed, I believe, the availability of emergency. We've scratched that out and added public services, crossed out to the site, police protection, fire protection, emergency ambulance service to support the proposed development. Can you explain that to me?
Sure. These are the findings that the zoning board will use in making a decision on a special use, or actually this is, in this paragraph, these are the findings used for the RRO map amendment.
Mm-hmm.
The current ordinance talks about the availability of emergency services to the site, period. It's being proposed to be changed to the availability of public services, and then it gives those examples. And so it's not really changing the substance. It's trying to make it literally easier to understand.
Mr. J. I too caught that, obviously, because of the occupation I'm in. I don't understand. There is a difference between emergency services and public services. You took out emergency services, but then you listed all emergency services. It makes no sense whatsoever. Could you explain why?
Well, I thought we discussed that specific item when this first proposal was here at the committee, and I thought that was what was discussed by the...
Well, does it make any sense to you? I think, in case I'm wrong, that the act, every one of the things that you list is emergency services. And emergency services are not always public. And in fact, a lot of them are private. It's again more this... I can't hardly understand it. Mr. Weibel?
Well, I have to disagree with Mr. J. First of all, police and fire are not always there for emergencies. They're often, in your situation maybe, but no, if you want the police to come to talk to you about a problem in the neighborhood, that's not an emergency service.
That's an emergency service.
So that
any
your,
way you look at it, that's an emergency
Jay,
service.
I understand you have a different definition, Mr. J. Okay. However, there's no question that emergency services are public services. There's no question about that. If it's private, then that's something you pay for. You can do it. You can buy whatever you want. But as far as the public services that are available in the area, that's what they look at.
He's absolutely not correct. The ambulance services in Champaign County are both private.
Let's have a little order.
Can I
hold it, Mr. J?
Can I finish? I have one other little question. Minor. Very minor.
Nice.
Right in. Thank you. Microphone. J. Under J. The amount of disturbance and effects, there's again a little tricky thing that was changed. I don't quite understand why. And my concern about this was, if you read that whole thing, which is part of what it was originally, wildlife habitat really concerns me, because that's saying to me as a farmer that I can't change wildlife habitat. Is that correct?
I don't believe that's what it's saying. This goes back to policy 416, which was part of the review that happened at this committee back in March. And, in fact, that was part of our proposal to the committee. So this didn't come up afterwards. This is what we had always planned to do, and we tried to make that as clear to this committee as we could.
Well, am I correct in the assumption, though, that if I disturbed some amount of disturbance to a wildlife area, I'm in violation of this ordinance?
This ordinance has no standards for that. These factors are only considered, they're only relevant, they're only discussed in the context of a rural residential overlay rezoning. And it would be, I mean, not having any standard, it would be whatever the ZBA decided was, you know, a significant disturbance. That actually has never come up in an RRO case to date, so we don't even have a precedence there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, let's take a vote on this, please.
What's that?
I'm sorry, I didn't see a hand up.
Ralph.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Maxwell.
Ralph was first, and then Mr. Maxwell. I apologize. I can't hear you, Ralph.
I just want to see a roll call vote.
A roll call. Mr. Maxwell.
I wasn't here in March, so you may be retracing ground. But why, John, do you feel the need to put the amount of disturbance to in there and change effect? What are you trying to accomplish by doing that?
It's pretty much literally the wording of policy 416 of the Land Resource Management Plan.
Mr. Mosier.
John, all those CRP contracts along these ditches are 10 or 15 year leases with the federal government. They've already stipulated in that contract what you can do and what you can't. Well, it's under the term of that lease. When that lease runs out and you decide you don't want to be in it anymore, you've got the privilege of plowing it up and putting it back in corn.
Thank you. Roll call vote, please.
Was there a second on that, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, second by Mr. Betts.
Results.
Yes. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Could you speak up a little louder, please?
Yes.
No.
Overview?
No. Oh.
Jay?
No.
Brown? Kurtz?
Yes.
Weinberg?
Yes.
Maxwell?
No.
McGinty? Mosier?
No.
Nudo?
No.
No.
Yes.
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 Ocean carries. Let's go to the next. B2, request to amend Champaign County's ordinance zoning case 684-AT-11. Petition to Champaign County Zoning Administrator. Mr. Langenheim moves. Second by Ms. Coward. I'm sorry, I heard the voice, but I'm not sure who it was. Is Mrs. Burks? Let's go with Ms. Burks. Okay, Ms. Coward. Okay. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, let's go to C, upcoming Citizens Planner Workshop on September 4th, information only. No monthly report. I have no other business. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Monthly report. There it is. Monthly report on your desk. Any questions?
Second.
So moved by Mr. Betts, second by Mr. Richards. All in favor?
Aye.
Placed on file. Opposed? Motion. Motion carries. Any other business? Designation placed on the consent agenda? Nothing. Zero. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Motion carries.